series of tubes. Massive tubes. It really is the internet consumer bill of rights. Because you got tangled up with all of these things that are going on the internet commercially. The world has turned against this. If your own personal internet, that is you and me. You and me is that right? Tubes. The internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
It's a series of tubes.
Listening to AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel. Left Channel. And streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
CBS News. I'm Lou Milliano. Governor Jeb Bush in Florida had already appointed a commission to review lethal injections in his state. But spokeswoman Christy Campbell says this week's botched execution prompted the governor to halt all executions and put extra attention on that commission.
There was a committee, or it's already started. Those facts and information will be turned over to the commission for their review. And their first preliminary draft of the report is due to the governor and to the legislature on, February 1st of 2007. And their final report is due on March 1st of 2007.
In California, a federal judge has ruled lethal injection a violation of cruel and unusual punishment. Richard Dieter's an opponent of the death penalty.
California ruling is the result of extensive studies, ones that Florida hasn't conducted but apparently now is going to undertake. And so this is a ruling that's had the best experts in the country come together, and now they're going to say whether this can proceed any further.
CBS News legal consultant Andrew Cohen.
Neither one of these things does away with the death penalty in Florida or in California. The problem is not with the death penalty itself here. The problem is with how it is implemented, the way that the lethal injection is done. We saw it a couple of days ago in Florida. It has problems, and that's exactly the sort of thing that the California judge was worried about, and that's why he stopped the whole program there.
The Florida execution was botched due to needles in soft tissue, not in a vein. It took a half hour, not the normal 10 minutes. More than 300 people say they became ill, and at least three have been hospitalized after eating at an Olive Garden last weekend in Indianapolis. Restaurant spokesman Steve Coe.
What we've heard from the health department, the major focus of theirs is looking at the possibility of an employee working at the restaurant with flu-like symptoms.
Health officials have found no link to the E. coli outbreak that sickened dozens of people who ate at Taco Bell's in the Northeast. Relatives of three men missing in bitter weather on Oregon's Mount Hood comforted each other today and held out hope that the trio has survived. The two Texans and one New Yorker have been on the mountain for 8 days now. Search Captain Chris Barnard.
We have a C-130 aircraft from the 152nd Airlift Wing in Reno, Nevada. This C-130 is equipped with SCAFE-View technology, which is an intelligence platform with both day and night reconnaissance capabilities.
Bernard says the C-130 Hercules aircraft is up in the air, mapping the search area. Donald Rumsfeld said farewell at the Pentagon today and spoke of the challenges the U.S. faces during a time of terrorism and unstable dictators.
A conclusion by our enemies that the United States lacks the will or the resolve to carry out missions that demand sacrifice and demand patience is every bit as dangerous as an imbalance of conventional military power.
On the markets, the Dow closed up 29. This is CBS News.
Well, we're here with CompUSA technology expert Meg Pixels.
Hi, Bob.
Meg, I'm looking for a holiday gift for my nephew Kyle, the would-be world adventurer.
Would-be?
Well, he hasn't left his kitchen in 2 years.
How about the new HP Pavilion dual-core notebook? 15-inch display, 80-gig hard drive, a gig of memory, just $629.99.
That's great.
Get him everything he needs with a complete gift pack and save. Buy a notebook and save 10% on qualifying accessories when you buy three or more. There are many complete gift packs to choose from.
If he ever leaves his kitchen, he'll love it.
If?
Yeah, he lives for ham.
The big one, really big, really,
really
big.
Don't miss the big one at Kohl's this Friday and Saturday. It's our biggest sale of the season. Save extra during power hours, featuring 100 night owl and early bird specials. Friday, 3 p.m. to midnight, and Saturday, 6 a.m. to 1 p.m. Save an extra 15% on diamond jewelry, already 60% off, and all toys already 10 to 50% off. Get an extra 10% off all kitchen electrics, already 15 to 50% off, and a digital camera, only $89.99. It's the big one this Friday and Saturday. Kohl's, expect great things.
A step up in railroad security. The details from John Harchie.
Homeland Security wants railroads to appoint security coordinators to work with the government on possible threats. Rail companies are to determine the safest routes and help the government locate specific rail cars with certain toxic materials in any particular area within a 30-minute period. The goal is to make sure shippers and Homeland Security know where potentially dangerous shipments are and to reduce standstill time in transit.
The U.S. military says that three more American soldiers have died this week in fighting in Iraq. This month is shaping up to be a deadly one for American troops, especially for those fighting Sunni-led militants in volatile areas of west of Baghdad. George Clooney says the people of the Darfur region are suffering and dying while the world bickers over the crisis in Sudan. The actor held a news conference today at the United Nations. He said the Darfur situation is grave and about to get worse. I'm Lou Miliano. CBS News.
This holiday, we have...
Hey, listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? Want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
New rule. Prince Harry is going to hurt someone. Look at this kid. He's a thundering ball of rage. His mom's dead. His father dates rotted tree bark. His brother gets to be king, and he's destined to spend the rest of his life being photographed doing nothing. Arrest him before he kills a woman. New rule. Country music stars can't be authors. Charlie Daniels' new book, Ain't No Rag, Freedom, Family, and the Flag, it's a collection of musings by noted white trash icon Charlie Daniels on subjects ranging from American flags to American flag bumper stickers to what to do to a hippie if you catch him trying to burn your flag. Before this book, I was ambivalent on the issue of flag burning. Now I find myself reconsidering the question of book burning.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Live from our studios in New York City, this is the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
I have no idea where this will lead us. But I have a definite feeling it will be a place both wonderful and strange.
Welcome to the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. It is Friday, the Ides of December, December 15th, 2006. 6 minutes past the hour right now. Coming up on the show this hour, fighting the war on terror, one very, very, very small step at a time.
If we focus on protecting those means of transportation, we are basically taking a very significant percent of the risk of high inhalation chemicals off the table.
High inhalation chemicals. That's Homeland Security Chief Michael Chertoff. Skeletor, once again, too little, too late. I will explain more on the administration's half-hearted attempt to protect our transportation system in just a moment. Also on the show this hour, we'll follow up with my new obsession, that Pantex nuclear disaster waiting to happen in Texas. We'll also have some awkward news about beauty queens and presidential hopefuls. It's all coming up. But first, a quick update on a few of today's top headlines, starting with news from Iraq and life during wartime. December 2006 is on track to be one of the worst months yet for American troops in Iraq. The military today reported the deaths of two American Marines in Anbar province and the death of one U.S. Army soldier in Nineveh province, which is northwest of Baghdad. That puts the number of American troops killed in Iraq this month thus far at 54, and it is only December 15th. Here's a report today from MSNBC's Jim Masita on the increasingly untenable situation for the media in Iraq, trying to cover what seems to be an increasingly out-of-control situation.
I think the reality that we see is one of pervasive violence, one where our own circle of security seems to be shrinking. Certainly in our little universes here where we live with other Iraqis who are truly the courageous ones, who are willing to risk their lives every day to go out and get the stories that we can no longer get very often, they also are affected. There's hardly one of our staff who has not lost a loved one, who has not just barely escaped a car bomb. We certainly, in Baghdad, we certainly feel it, and we're traveling much less and getting out of Baghdad much less as a result of that. So the media is reporting the violence. The problem is that our own ability to report this war is very restricted as well.
A very sobering report today from MSNBC. The reporter was Jim Masita from Baghdad. Iraqi police said today that two car bombs blew up at U.S. checkpoints in Ramadi today, killing four civilians as well as the drivers of the cars, the suicide bombers. Interestingly, the U.S. military is not confirming that, but the Iraqi police says it happened at U.S. military checkpoints. Kind of strange. A drive-by shooting in Kut killed one civilian at a bus stop today. Iraqi police say of those people who were kidnapped in broad daylight at a Baghdad marketplace earlier this week, they say that 25 of the hostages have been freed. No word on how many people are still being held. Ready for your story of the day from Iraq? Do you remember the robocalls that people got all over the country during the midterm elections? Remember this? It was calls telling people that their polling place had moved or they'd be arrested if they voted. And there were those Republican Party calls that sounded like they were coming from Democratic candidates, and they'd call you over and over and over and over and over again at all hours of the day and night to try to make people who were getting these calls hate the Democratic candidate. Remember that? Robocalls were apparently the big innovation in Republican dirty tricks this past election. Now they're getting robocalls in Iraq. This story comes from Nir Rosen, who you may remember me interviewing here on this show. I remember him as singly the most depressing interview I have ever done. Remember this guy, Nir Rosen? He wrote the book In the Belly of the Green Bird about the Iraqi insurgency. I remember asking him if he had any hope, any vision of anything getting better in Iraq, and his answer was basically a flat no, it's the apocalypse. It was the worst, the most downbeat interview I've ever done in my life. Nir Rosen is now writing for the new All Iraq News All the Time website, started by a former bigwig at CNN. The website's called Iraq Slogger. And their first scoop in their first week on the web is that Iraqi households are getting robocalls from somebody speaking very formal Arabic who rails against Muqtada al-Sadr and the Mahdi army, the Shiite militia, right? Nir Rosen reports at Iraq Slogger this week that the robocalls are freaking people out in Iraq, because they think, they don't know what these are, they don't know who's calling them, they don't know why they're getting the calls, and they think that the Mahdi army will know that they got these calls and will come kill them for having gotten one. PSYOPs, Karen Hughes style, right? In Baghdad, the caller ID on the calls shows that they're coming from outside Iraq, but nobody apparently knows really where they're coming from, and nobody has taken responsibility for them. Barack Obama, or as the right wing would like you to think of him,
Barack Hussein Obama.
Barack Hussein Osama Obama. Senator Obama did an interview with the Chicago Sun-Times editorial board yesterday in which he talked about his possible presidential bid. He said he has thought seriously about running. He has concluded that an 08 White House bid would be, quote, viable. He says he thinks he has a pretty good chance of winning the nomination. But one of the main concerns that he has and that his family has about him running is his safety. He said to the Sun-Times that he pointed out that you don't get Secret Service protection in a campaign until you're the nominee, essentially. And he says that he is therefore facing the prospect of maybe having to pay for his own big security detail during the primaries for his own safety. The issue, you might remember this also coming up when Colin Powell was talked about as a potential presidential candidate, of course. And what is the thing that Colin Powell and Barack Obama have in common? Yeah, this is a very specific type of glass ceiling for black leaders. Barack Obama's sister did a magazine interview earlier this year in which she said, quote, "Not to be offensive, but there are crazy people in America as well with crazy ideas. At the end of the day, what matters is that he is a black man. The history of America is quite violent," end quote. A big step forward today for second-class citizenship in New Jersey. The legislature was given the choice by the New Jersey State Supreme Court. They could either legalize gay marriage or legalize civil unions, which theoretically give the rights of marriage without the name to people who don't deserve marriage. Here's kind of a typical broadcast news report on the New Jersey decision today from Catherine Calloway at CNN Headline News.
New Jersey lawmakers have given gay and lesbian couples the same rights as married people. Governor John Corzine plans to sign that legislation. It gives same-sex couples equal rights for things like adoption, inheritance, and hospital visitation.
Theoretically. You know, anybody who's in a civil union will tell you that it makes more clear than anything that marriage is a colloquial right. That if you represent yourself in any sort of public accommodation as being party to a civil union, as being civilly united or civilian unionized or whatever it is you're supposed to say, that does not convey the same meaning in the world at large as being able to say, I'm married, or this is my spouse, or this is my husband, or this is my wife. Still, I mean, civil unions are better than nothing, going from not having the family law rights of citizens to having the family law rights of second-class citizens. That is progress, sure. Massachusetts, still the only state in the country where gay people can legally marry the person they love. Connecticut, Vermont, and now New Jersey have these unmarriage rights. There are two good things here to report about the law that passed in New Jersey, though, which are not getting a lot of attention, and I think they are important, and they're both good. Number one, the law also adds gender identity or expression to the state's non-discrimination law, which is very good news for the transgendered community. Number two, it establishes a government commission that will report every 6 months on how civil unions fall short of the rights accorded married couples. Those are two smart things that Garden State Equality and other activist groups should be proud of getting included in this new law today, even if it is a second-class citizenship kind of law. You know, Miss America is in trouble. Technically, not Miss America is in trouble. It's Miss USA. Miss USA is the beauty queen who goes to the Miss Universe pageant. Technically, I don't know. Anyway, Miss USA, the former Miss Kentucky, is apparently in trouble for rowdy behavior in New York City bars. She's supposed to be a role model as Miss USA, and they are thinking of stripping her of her tiara for unrole model-y behavior. If that happens, the title will devolve from Miss Kentucky to the runner-up, who was Miss California. The Miss USA organization and Donald Trump, who apparently co-owns the pageant with NBC, I know, they're investigating the allegations. All that scandal, however, though, has not scared off Sam Brownback, the right-wing fundamentalist presidential candidate I like to think of as Miss Sodom and Gomorrah. Sam Brownback has not been dissuaded by all this bad behavior in New York City bars about Miss USA. He has not been dissuaded. He is going ahead with his plans to name a former Miss America to his presidential exploratory committee. Because if there's one thing that mullahs need to improve their image, it's beauty pageant winners. Those are some of the stories I'm keeping an eye on today. But for more news, here's Kent Jones.
Thanks, Rachel. Nintendo said it will replace 3.2 million straps for its new Wii computer game controllers after receiving a rash of reports that it just keeps flying out of people's hands. The Wii wand is used to mimic the motions of a tennis racket, golf club, or a sword, or anything else that exists in the boring old real world. Said a spokesman, quote, "People tend to get a bit excited, especially while playing Wii sports, and in some cases, the control would come loose from their hands. The new strap will be almost twice as thick." And that may be the dirtiest quote about something not dirty ever. There have been reports of people smashing glass and wrecking TV sets using their new Wiis, and one fan apparently sprained and cut a finger on her right hand while trying to rally for a comeback victory in Wii baseball, which means she plays twice as hard as A-Rod. Remember the tenor who stomped off the stage at La Scala this week after the audience booed him?
Yeah.
Well, Il Divo Sensitivo, Roberto Alagna, showed up yesterday in the piazza outside the famous Milanese Opera House shortly before their performance of Aida. Not, I repeat, starring Robert Alagna ever again. And he began singing before the crowd of onlookers and photographers. Alagna, who had said he would sue the theater if they did not let him return, belted out a poignant passage from Puccini's Madame Butterfly, containing the words, quote, "Farewell, flowered sanctuary of happiness and love." Then Alagna reportedly took a photograph of the theater with his cell phone, saying, quote, "I came to take a souvenir, my last happy memory of La Scala, because I don't know when I will see it again." He then clutched his heart, flopped to the pavement, and waited for applause. Later on Kent Jones Now, Belgian TV hoax sends country into a panic. Quick, somebody call Jean-Claude Van Damme. I mean it.
Rachel.
Thank you, Kent. He really showed up outside and sang a song on his own?
Started singing. The man has music in his heart.
What a strange person.
He's odd.
He's turning into kind of my new favorite, I can't remember what his name is, celebrity.
Roberto Alagna.
Yeah, I'm not going to remember that.
Roberto Alagna.
Okay. Roberto Alagna.
With the golden voice.
Yeah. 18 minutes past the hour. It's the Rachel Maddow Show. We got my front page story coming up. We'll tell you what Michael Chertoff thinks can be protected if we only never let it stop moving.
Oh, no.
You're listening to The Rachel Maddow Show. Nerds, welcome.
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
On Air America Radio.
A liberal dose of the...
New rule, one dear to my heart. Lap dancing is a First Amendment right. The L.A. City Council this week banned lap dancing. What is next? Burning books? Lap dancers, or Imagineers, as I like to call them, are artists drawing you into their fantasy world, much like a skilled novelist does. If novelists had perfectly waxed bikini lines. But more importantly, lap dancers are expressing an idea called hope. The hope that someday a skinny young woman with artificial breasts and a navel piercing will want to have sex with you. And without that hope, millions of American men might just as well throw themselves into the sea.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
Sunny day with tonight's AccuTerra forecast.
And folks, wasn't it just a perfect day for a terror alert? Bone chilling in the morning, clear and present danger in the afternoon, tapering off into cold sweats at night. Tomorrow, AccuTerra is predicting 100% chance of a really big terror alert to take our mind off bad economic news. An Al-Qaeda cell coming down from Canada into here, the Great Lakes regions, the folks in the Detroit and Saginaw. You might want to put on that extra layer of Kevlar. Our exclusive AccuTerra radar is picking up a lot of chatter out here in the Denver area, so stay away from chemical plants, nuclear facilities, and of course, the French fries at Arby's. Here in the West, some light showers of ammonium nitrate, so little sarin gas are possible in the Los Angeles area, but don't expect loss of life. The Santa Anas are going to push all that nasty gunk out. Here's your 5-day. Yellow, bluish yellow, yellow again, yellow gradually becoming orange, and orange back into yellow. And we've got an orangish red weekend on tap, so be sure to have plenty of bottled water and canned goods on hand. And that's terror. All right, make it a great day.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
New rule. Jewish people have to start... The Jewish population in America dropped 5% in the last decade, which may explain why this country's finances have gone to... Breed, you sons of Abraham, breed! We need you. Israel needs you. Kobe Bryant, Robert Blake, and Phil Spector need you. Without Jews, who's going to write all those sitcoms about blacks and Hispanics? New rule. Living in a box for 6 weeks doesn't make you a magician, it makes you homeless.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
Matto Show on Air America Radio. Our truth emissions are destroying the spin zone layer.
Welcome back to the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. Happy Friday. It is 23 minutes past the hour. Thank you for being here. Coming up shortly, I'm going to stay on that incredibly alarming story about the Pantex nuclear plant in Texas, where they build and dismantle nuclear bombs. Employees there have anonymously been trying to blow the whistle on what they say is an incredible level of decrepitude, decay, and neglect of the physical plant at Pantex. They also say they're being forced to work 80 hours a week, which is not comforting when you realize that what they're doing is assembling and disassembling nuclear bombs. Local residents say they are burning off incredibly toxic high explosives in the open air, and they are afraid the nuclear waste there in unlined pits could contaminate the huge Ogallala Aquifer, which feeds groundwater in 9 states. We're going to check in with the lead investigator on nuclear weapons security for the Project on Government Oversight about Pantex in just a moment. First, though, it is time to wade into the old mainstream to see if there's any gold worth panning for among today's top stories.
Eureka!
The Rachel Maddow Show front page story today is about stuff you might think had been taken care of since 9/11. You'd be wrong. I take Amtrak every week, which is the way I get back and forth from Massachusetts to New York. And when you take the train a lot, I often take it at weird times. I'm often taking like the first train of the day or the last train of the day. And you realize, especially when you're not out at normal commuter times, that the Amtrak system, the passenger rail system in this country, is really quite integrated with the freight train system in this country. When we pull into my station at Springfield, Mass., at least when we pull in late at night, there's always a train full of tanker cars and freight cars sitting there. There's even coal trains that run alongside Interstate 91 into downtown Northampton, Mass., where I drive from the train station. There's freight trains running everywhere in the country, including through really highly populated areas. And occasionally, freight trains are carrying very dangerous things, right? Chemicals, big tanker cars full of chemicals. And occasionally, there are horrible accidents. You might recall the toxic train derailment I reported on that evacuated Crawford, Texas, in September of this year, evacuated half the town. Do you remember that? Also, the New Brighton, Pennsylvania derailment in October this year when all those train cars went off that really high bridge into the river below and they burned for days. There's actually a website called toxictrains.org that is specifically just about this threat. Since 9/11, of course, there have been terrorist attacks on rail systems all over the world. In India, in Madrid, of course, in London, there have been attacks on train systems. But today, December 15th of 2006, more than 5 years after 9/11, today is the first day that the Department of Homeland, quote, security, has put forth any ideas about the safety of trains in the United States. Their big idea for how to keep trains safe in the United States, particularly if they're full of toxic chemicals, is to not let them stop. You don't have cut number 10 there, Chris?
We want to reduce and drive down that standstill time because the vulnerability of the system is the greatest when the car is sitting still, and there's the least vulnerability and risk when the car is moving rapidly.
That's the plan, then. Homeland Security Secretary Skeletor Michael Chertoff, that's the big plan. Do not let these train cars stop. At least 8 cities, American cities, have proposed rerouting trains that contain particularly deadly chemicals so they don't go through very densely populated areas. And that makes sense if you think they might derail. It also makes sense if you think they might be targeted in a terrorist explosion. D.C. passed a law saying you can't send hazmat stuff through D.C. within 2 miles of the Capitol. But the government is resisting that idea, as are the freight train companies. They want voluntary standards, of course. No regulation of business to keep the country safe. We couldn't do that now. And why would we need to regulate anything anyway, as long as we keep the trains moving? That's the big plan, at least for now, from the Department of Homeland Security. Democrats say when they take over Congress, they will instead try the highly irregular technique of actually establishing safety regulations to protect the American people more than 5 years after 9/11. I know, crazy, forward-thinking Democrats. 27 minutes past the hour. This is the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
You're listening to AM 1320.
I wanted it all. Intelligence, great looks, physical strength, inner beauty, even social consciousness. Friends said that I wanted too much, but I wouldn't settle. And now, I have it all.
This woman is talking about her renewal by Anderson replacement windows from Hall's Window Center. If it looks better, lasts longer, and outperforms the competition, it's gotta be Anderson. The only windows and doors to receive Green Seal certification for energy efficiency and environmentally friendly manufacturing. Now you too can have it all. For a limited time, get 7 renewal by Anderson windows and 1 Anderson PermaShield patio door from Hall's Window Center for just $69.95. Left channel listeners save an extra $150. Go to HallsWindowCenter.com. Click on the green seal for your coupon. Visit Halls Window Center today on Business Park Drive in Sacramento and now in Roseville on Roseville Parkway next to BJ's. Call 1-800-76-HALLS. Smud financing available. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends September 30th.
Tonight is the author of American Gospel, John Meacham. Tell me about this book, American Gospel. Tell me about the American Gospel.
Well, I think the American Gospel is that the great good news about America is that religion shapes us without strangling us. That the founding fathers, who had grown up in the shadow of so much religious and sectarian strife, where temporal power and spiritual power had been joined together to the destruction and unhappiness of so many, found a way to protect religion as an element of public life without allowing us to become a theocracy.
Right, but they made it a Christian nation.
Well, no, they didn't. They didn't.
In fact, no, they did. I mean, you wrote the book and everything.
Well, I know, but...
These guys are Christians, right? These guys are founding fathers of Christians.
Well, they were Christians in the broadest possible sense, for instance.
In that they believed that Jesus Christ was the Son of God.
No, in that...
In that
Thomas Jefferson took a razor to the Gospels and cut out all the parts about the divinity of Jesus.
Uh-huh.
That part.
Well, what did he leave?
The moral teachings of...
Jesus. What he said?
Just what Jefferson thought should be in the Bible.
Well, why would Jefferson do that?
But because
did Jefferson help pen the Declaration of Independence?
That would be one. Yeah.
Endowed by
their creator,
and the laws of nature.
By creator, they certainly didn't mean Buddha, sir.
But they didn't mean the God of Abraham or God the Father. And
what about Isaac?
But on theological grounds, I would think that you would be against the idea of a Christian nation.
What are you talking about?
When Jesus stood before Pilate, he said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight." It says in the Epistle to Hebrews that we have no lasting city, but seek the city which is to come. A Christian nation is an impossibility theologically, because the only Christian nation is the kingdom of God. And what the founders wanted to do, and I think it's an important and arguably their greatest achievement, is protect religion from politics, from the vicissitudes of politics, while allowing it to play a role within the Republican lowercase r contract.
Let me just play my ace up my sleeve here, okay?
Okay.
In God we trust. It says in God we trust on the money. So in God we trust, they meant that?
I think that there is what Benjamin Franklin called a public religion. In 1749, Benjamin Franklin wrote a syllabus for what became the University of Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And he argued that a public religion was necessary for the morality of a people. The Declaration of Independence grounds our fundamental human rights, not as the gift of the state, which is what the Soviets did, but the gifts of God, of the laws of nature and of nature's God and of the Creator. That is the story of the country, and that is tied up with religion. But you can't force people to believe a certain creed. You can't force people to repeat certain words, because belief, when it's coerced, is not belief,
right.
It's tyranny.
That's what political parties are for. All right. John Meacham, the book is American Gospel.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio. Government inspected and disapproved.
Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. Thanks for being with us. Storms and record-breaking winds have killed at least 4 people in Washington State. More than 1 million people in the Pacific Northwest are without power in the storm's wake. Schools are closed across the Seattle area. Many flights have been canceled at SeaTac, the Seattle-Tacoma Airport. One county sheriff told reporters that he's asking everybody to stay home. A floating bridge east of Seattle remains closed, and a number of highways are blocked. Florida's governor has put a temporary halt to executions after a botched lethal injection earlier this week that we reported on here on the show. Florida's medical examiner has concluded that officials improperly inserted needles that were to deliver lethal chemicals into prisoner Angel Diaz. The execution took 34 minutes and required a second dose of lethal chemicals to complete. The medical examiner says he also found foot-long chemical burns on Angel Diaz's arms. Governor Jeb Bush announced that he is creating a commission to review lethal injection procedures and says he will not sign death warrants until the panel completes its report. Jeb Bush is due to leave office soon and will be succeeded by Governor-elect Charlie Crist. Finally, Democratic Senator Tim Johnson of South Dakota seems to be making progress today, recovering from emergency brain surgery late Wednesday night. Doctors described Senator Johnson as in critical condition but responsive. The senator's office said he was responding to his wife Barbara's voice today, holding her hand, and he was able to follow directions. So far, he has not needed any additional surgery, but doctors are not ruling that out as an eventual possibility. Senator Johnson suffered a brain hemorrhage on Wednesday that was caused by a rare and sometimes fatal condition that he had had since birth. It's 36 minutes past the hour right now. Those are some of the stories that we have been keeping an eye on. If you've been listening to the show this week, you know that we have been spending some time talking about, my new obsession. It's a nuclear plant in Texas. This all started with an article in the LA Times about an anonymous letter that had been written by employees of Pantex. Pantex is a nuclear weapons facility outside Amarillo, Texas. It's been there since 1942. The employees wrote this anonymous letter to raise concerns about safety at the facility. Last night, I spoke to a local activist, a woman whose farm abuts Pantex. Tonight, we tried to book a representative from the company that runs Pantex for the government, a company called BWXT. BWXT instead just emailed us a bunch of official statements on the issue and would not talk to us. It doesn't sound like they're going to make anybody available to talk to us ever, if their initial response today is anything to go by. Instead, we're turning to the Project on Government Oversight, POGO, which is based in Washington, D.C. POGO is the organization which reported the anonymous letter from employees at Pantex, released it to the press. They also submitted their own concerns to the Secretary of Energy in a letter earlier this week. Peter Stockton is the lead investigator on nuclear weapons security at POGO, the Project on Government Oversight in D.C., and he joins us on the phone from D.C. live this evening. Peter, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Rachel.
What is Pantex's record when it comes to safety issues? Are they thought of as being more of a worry, less of a worry, or par for the course with plants like this?
Well, you have to consider what goes on at Pantex. I mean, if you talk about safety throughout the weapons complex, it's really spread across the United States. Pantex is the one place where we assemble nuclear weapons. In other words, they're full-up weapons. And if one of these accidentally detonates, for example, a W-56 that they were working on when these two incidents happened, is 1,200 kilotons, or 100 times the size of the Hiroshima bomb.
And this is not a bomb that's in parts. This is literally a fully assembled bomb ready to go.
That's right. That's right. And that's the difference between that and some of the other incidents that can happen. That could be devastating, but they're generally in some of the other plants, but they're generally the size of only the Hiroshima bomb.
Wow. Only that.
Yeah.
Besides, that didn't do much damage.
Yeah.
You know, when we know about a couple of incidents at Pantex recently, you referred to these two incidents, one involving the W-56 warhead. Is that the one where they tried to fix it with duct tape?
There are two incidents. The earlier one was the one where the high explosive, there are three parts of the main parts of a nuclear weapon. There's a high explosive that sets off the reaction, and then that hits the plutonium pit, as they call it, and then that sets off the highly enriched uranium, and that's where you get the big bang in one of these.
And so when they were working on the W-56, they did, but there was something about there being a crack in the bomb.
Yeah, there was a crack in the HE, the high explosive. And according to one person, if it hit the floor or if they banged it significantly, it could have set off the weapon.
Wow.
And then the second one was even worse, where they used the wrong tool to try to open a warhead, and they overpressured the warhead, and they were told not to do it, and they continued to do it, and that could have ended up in a detonation as well.
Who are the people who are hired to do this work at Pantex? Are these highly skilled, highly paid jobs, or are these low-level
jobs?
Well,
they're relatively well paid. I mean, these are technicians that are relatively well trained. I think the problem here was that, I mean, clearly the problem here was the fatigue that the guys were complaining about in the anonymous letter. They're working 72 to 80 hours a week. And we talked to a weapons designer at one of the nuclear labs, and he said he wouldn't even work on his car engine after that many hours, let alone a nuclear weapon.
And so there's
pressure. There was pressure for the contractor, which was BWXT, to get the disassembled weapons out the door. And when you had that, they had to push the workers harder and harder. Now, the significance is that this coming year, they're going to increase the number of weapons that are going to be dismantled by 50%. And our recommendation is you hire one hell of a lot more technicians here that can work on these weapons.
But that, of course, would cut into the profit of the contract.
That's right.
Yeah.
Or it would cost the Department of Energy, that's in charge of the nuclear weapons program, more money, and which they don't want to do.
Well, BWXT is hired by the government to run this plant, both assembling and disassembling nuclear weapons. The people who work there are now saying there are incredible safety concerns, including, especially they're raising the concerns about fatigue and about physical conditions at the plant. Yep. We know from the National Nuclear, we know that there have been fines from the Energy Department for at least these couple of incidents or these very egregious errors in disassembling old bombs.
Which are ridiculous. Let me just tell you something about the fines. I mean, this is an old law, and the fines are ridiculous. The contractor makes $30 million in award fee and incentives. In other words, profit, pure profit. And in the first incident, they were charged $124,000, and in the other one, $110,000. Now, that isn't even chump change to these guys. I mean, you've got to get up into to possibly $10 million when they do something like this, and that's an incentive, or it's certainly a hell of a disincentive to run a sloppy operation.
$30 million in annual profit and their fines for potentially coming very close to setting off a nuclear detonation in Texas is $100,000.
That's right.
Unbelievable.
That's right.
Unbelievable to me.
Yeah.
But Peter, let me ask you this. I'm starting to understand. We've done this story now for 3 days running, talked to a bunch of different people involved. And I'm starting to get a sense of kind of the structure of how this is run, but I don't understand the way to fix it. Is this a case where the government is not overseeing this contract? Is the contractor to blame? Should the company be fired? Should the whole place just be shut down? What do you think should happen here?
Well, clearly, I mean, we're in favor, let me tell you, of disassembling weapons.
Yeah.
The fewer weapons we have, the better off we are in this country. And however, you've got to do it safely. And you have to, have to impress upon the contractors that they've got to run these plants safely, and particularly as we're talking about Pantex. I mean, that's the most sensitive plant in the entire complex. And we've just, it's a failure of oversight at various levels. Yet, there is the incentive we were talking about to get the things out the door, and you get a higher profit and on the back of the workers, essentially. And you've got to, they should be aware of what's going on. I mean, the Department of Energy and that. And BWXT certainly has to pay more attention to what they're doing. Keep in mind, BWXT is involved in, I think, in terms of the weapons plants, there's seven of them, and I think they're involved in the management of six of them to different levels of management. They actually totally manage the one at Pantex, totally manage the one at Oak Ridge, where we have 500 tons of highly enriched uranium, which is the most sensitive one of the more sensitive of all of our sites, and that kind of thing. And that if they're acting that way here, God only knows what they're doing at some of the other plants.
Should the government be doing this work directly instead of making it a for-profit thing?
I've got to tell you, we've been through that before. These are all GOCOs. In other words, they're government-owned, contractor-operated plants. And we've been through that as to whether the government should be actually operating them. I think that you could probably do it with contractors. Some contractors do better than others. And I think that you probably would have to go with contractors, but you simply have to have better oversight of what they're doing.
Peter, let me ask you one last thing, and that is that Project on Government Oversight was instrumental in getting this letter that was written by the employees of Pantex released to the press, which is how I found out about this plant and what the problems going on there in the first place.
Sure.
Why did the employees have to do this anonymously? We got a statement from Pantex today from Laura Bailey at Pantex, which sounds to me like a made-up name. But she said,
that's right.
But she said, you know, we absolutely value our employees. It's their input, and it's their right as to tell us about these things. Why did it have to be anonymous, do you think?
Oh, there's a very good reason for that. You probably heard of whistleblowers before.
Mm.
Let me tell you, there is no protection for whistleblowers. If somebody sticks their head up and they get it knocked off by the contractor, the DOE doesn't come to their rescue. There are no laws in place. Institutions try to limit the damage to the institutions, and institutions have a long memory. Even though the courts will demand that the person get their job back, let me tell you, they never get their job back, or they're harassed for the rest of their career. It's a really ugly system from that point of view, and it's too bad. And we recommend seriously that everybody stay anonymous as long as they can.
Wow. Is there anything that I, as a member of the liberal media cabal, can be doing? And listeners on my show who have really responded to this story, a lot of people have been contacting us about this, wondering if there is anything to do.
What you're doing is fabulous, let me tell you. I mean, that's what's going to do it. And particularly the people around Pantex and in Texas and around a lot of these other plants, if they, and we've done reports on a number of these. We've done a number of reports. They can go to our website, which is just pogo at pogo.org.
Mm-hmm.
And we have reports dealing with all of the weapons facilities. I worked for the Secretary of Energy, Bill Richardson, for 2 years, and I was on the Hill for 30 years off and on, overseeing part of the weapons complex, even though we had no jurisdiction, but we thought it was important.
Well, Peter, we're going to try to get Governor Richardson to talk to us about this. We're going to stay on the story. We're going to direct people to your website at pogo.org, and I thank you for joining us on a Friday.
Okay.
I really appreciate
enough,
it.
Rachel.
Thank you. Peter Stockton, lead investigator on nuclear weapons security at the Project on Government Oversight. I'm staying on this. I'm now obsessed. It's the Rachel Maddow Show.
The Rachel Maddow Show.
I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man. New shit has come to light.
On Air America Radio.
This aggression will not stand, man. La, 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 la. La, la, la.
The following is an actual call to Air America Radio.
I have a surefire way to get people to vote, which drove my kids crazy. Every friend of theirs that they brought into the house, I asked them if they were 18. If they said yes, I asked them if they were registered. And I told them, if you're going to be coming into my home, you're going to be a responsible citizen. I didn't tell them to register Republican, Democrat, whatever. And then I had one kid even say to me, please don't tell my dad. But after listening to you and doing some research, I voted Democrat.
Talk to all of America from anywhere in America. On Air America Radio.
Hello?
How in the world did you do this?
Do what, Mom?
Put a picture of my precious grandson on a postage stamp.
It's not an ordinary stamp, Mom. It's a photo stamp. Now anyone can take photos of their kids, pets, or almost anything and turn them into real U.S. postage at photostamps.com. You just go to the website, customize your own photo stamps, and they'll arrive in the mail in a few days.
Imagine all the possibilities. Birth announcements, wedding invitations, holiday cards.
To make all your mail unforgettable, go to photostamps.com today. Photostamps. Real postage, really you.
Please welcome back to the show, Robin Williams. Robin!
Mild-mannered president. It goes from the great communicator to the decider.
I am the decider.
I am the decider. It's not even a word. He is the president, and he makes decisions. Here come the decider. Here come the decider.
Did you, when you heard that, did it strike you in that same way? Did it take you a couple of minutes to process that he had just referred to himself as the decider?
It's like when he said, what's the question that's not asked? Is our children learning? And then the decider just seems to be a progression. You just kind of go, every time he stands next to Tony Blair, I just want to put a telethon number. You know, it's like... Everybody next to him has a T-shirt. I'm with stupid. It's like...
And every episode of The Decider ends with him walking slowly alone on the highway.
Yes, he walks.
Not just Decider. Right, exactly.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cache Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cache Fever Jackpot hits, a Cache Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cache Fever Jackpot total and your Cache Club points online now at CacheCreek.com. So join Cache Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
Hey, listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? You want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio. When they shred it, we dig it out of the trash.
Welcome back. Happy Friday. This is The Rachel Maddow Show. It is 52 minutes past the hour.
From The Rachel Maddow Show, now it's Kent Jones Now. With Kent Jones Now.
Hello, Dateline Health. A new study says that adults age 18 to 23 who make their own meals have much healthier diets than their peers who do not, said nutritionist Nicole Larson. Quote, it's really important to be preparing food at home. Those who were preparing foods more often at home had a much higher likelihood of reaching dietary guidelines. Overall, however, young adults don't eat healthy regardless of who's cooking. Just 21% of young men and 36% of young women in the survey bought fresh vegetables every week. Hmm. And only 18% met requirements for eating deep yellow and green vegetables. Side one researcher, if only we could figure out some way to caffeinate a squash. Rachel?
Thank you. Deep yellow.
The deep yellow.
I don't think I eat any deep yellow
like
food at all.
Peppers, you know, or carrots, I guess.
Deep yellow. You know, coming up, carrots, deep yellow.
I'm reaching.
Yeah. Listen, coming up later on the show, one of my favorite musical guests, Mark Arely, singer-songwriter who I know from Western Mass. His latest record is called Hope and Other Casualties. He's going to be playing tonight in New York at the Living Room on the Lower East Side, but he came by the Air America Studios this afternoon, and before he left, after the interview, I convinced him to play an extra song for us.
Nice.
He's got this other album he's quietly released. It's an album of lullabies and love songs called Innocent When You Dream, and I managed to convince Mark to play one of my favorites off of that record, a song called Tired Eyes. We'll have the full interview with Mark coming up next hour, but I thought it might be nice for a little Friday musical preview that isn't about potential nuclear disaster in Texas. Here's Mark Arely playing Tired Eyes from Innocent When You Dream.
The sun is long gone down. Soon the moon will rise. Day is done for now. It's time to close those tired eyes. Make a wish upon a star. There's a million in the sky. Tomorrow is not far. It's time to close those tired eyes. Make the most of everything you dream of. The night is not so long as it seems, love. But the morning dove he moans, the whippoorwill she cries. You are not alone. Try to close those tired eyes. There's no need to be forlorn. There'll be no sad goodbyes. I'll be here in the morning when when it's time for you to rise. So make the most of everything you dream of. The night is not so long as it seems, love. The sun is long gone down, and soon the moon will rise. Day is done for now. It's time to close those tired eyes. Try to close those tired eyes.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mark Arelli playing the song called Tired Eyes from Innocent When You Dream. That was one take in the talk radio studio.
I am impressed.
Yeah, he's awesome. We're going to hear more music from a very different side of Mark Arelli coming up next hour, as well as my interview with him. This is The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio, and I can do extra music on Fridays. It's my show.
This is the Nation Minute on Air America Radio.
I suspect even many well-informed Air America listeners don't know about the 18,000 votes that were lost in one congressional district in Sarasota, Florida on Election Day. They were lost on touchscreen voting machines in a tight House race, leaving no paper trail. What happened was that the ballots of nearly 13% of those who showed up at the polls showed votes in all races except the close congressional contest between Christine Jennings and Vern Buchanan. This represented a massive undercount compared to other counties, so it appears almost certain that a computer glitch sent the votes down the electronic memory hole. The problem is that there's no way to go back and look since there's no paper trail. Since this travesty of justice has come to light, Governor Jeb Bush has refused to take steps that would ensure that this won't happen in the future. While citizen groups are rallying in Sarasota, the D.C.-based group Common Cause is holding a virtual rally to press for legislation that would make something like this impossible in the future. Urge your senators to support legislation to mandate a paper trail. Ask a friend to do the same, and check out the Common Cause website to learn how to do more. I'm Peter Rothberg from The Nation magazine for Air America. See the Act Now blog at thenation.com for more information.
Yeah. What do you need to take Viagra on an all-boys vacation?
I can't quit you, Rush.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
You're listening to AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
Lethal injection executions are suspended in two states.
What they're saying here is, if you can't fix it, you can't use it.
Rumsfeld leaves with praise for the troops.
It has been the highest honor of my life to serve with them, these makers of history.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. Lethal injection was adopted as the preferred method of execution because it seemed more humane than the electric chair, the gas chamber, or hanging. But now, Florida Governor Jeb Bush has suspended executions because a man put to death Wednesday took 34 minutes to die because the needles passed through his veins into his flesh. Christy Campbell is a spokeswoman for Bush.
The governor today issued an executive order that created the Commission on Administration of Lethal Injection to review the procedures and protocols in place when administering the lethal injection.
Attorney Suzanne Myers-Keffer represented the executed man, convicted killer Angel Nieves Diaz.
It confirms what we've been saying all along, that Mr. Diaz would suffer undue pain and torture as a result of lethal injection.
At the same time, a federal judge in San Francisco has ruled California's lethal injection method unconstitutional, saying that can be remedied by changing the procedure. CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen.
Death penalty advocates really only have one choice here if they want to see a resumption of executions in Florida and California and really elsewhere. They're going to have to push the medical community and prison officials to change the way lethal injections are done, to remix the cocktail, if you will, to make it both more potent and more humane.
Now this.
Well, we're here with CompUSA technology expert Meg Pixels.
Hi, Bob.
Meg, I'm looking for a holiday gift for my nephew Kyle, the would-be world adventurer.
Would-be?
Well, he hasn't left his kitchen in 2 years.
How about the new HP Pavilion dual-core notebook? 15-inch display, 80-gig hard drive, a gig of memory, just $629.99.
That's great.
Get him everything he needs with a complete gift pack and save. Buy a notebook and save 10% on qualifying accessories when you buy three or more. There are many complete gift packs to choose from.
If he ever leaves his kitchen, he'll love it.
If?
Now, he lives for ham.
Is there someone on your gift list who loves the great outdoors? REI can help you decide. Did they knit their own mountain bike cozy? Is their front door a nylon zippered flap? Are they wearing ski goggles in their passport photo? Is their idea of a walk in the park a run up a mountain? If you answered yes to any of these questions, head straight to REI to find expert gift picks for that outdoor enthusiast or pick up an REI gift card. So come to REI or shoprei.com.
At the Pentagon today, an effusive goodbye for Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. CBS News correspondent Mark Noller has the story.
So much praise was lavished on Rumsfeld at the farewell ceremony, it raises questions about why President Bush asked him to step down.
This man knows how to lead, and he did. And the country is better off for it.
But the greatest superlative came from Vice President Cheney himself, a former defense chief.
Don Rumsfeld is the finest Secretary of Defense this nation has ever had.
But looking for a fresh perspective on the war in Iraq, President Bush decided Rumsfeld needed to be replaced, and former CIA Director Robert Gates takes over at the Pentagon on Monday. Mark Noller, CBS News, the White House.
CBS News correspondent David Martin reports the U.S. commanders in Iraq are waiting for more troops.
A 3,500-man brigade from the 82nd Airborne to be sent to Kuwait soon after the holidays, where they would be available immediately should President Bush order a surge into Iraq. Pentagon officials expect Robert Gates to approve the request after he takes over from Rumsfeld.
Gates plans to visit Iraq soon. Fidel Castro's days are numbered, says Director of National Intelligence John Negroponte. He says the Cuban president is very ill and could die within months. The Pacific Northwest has been whipped all day by a terrible windstorm. At least four people have been killed, and some 1.5 million homes and businesses are without power, including these folks in Seattle.
Yeah, there's no lights. There's no street lights.
Nope. No power at all.
We lost it for a while, about a block away from my house, so everything's dark.
This whole neighborhood down here has lost power. I don't have heat, and so it's very cold. But hopefully it won't last that long. We lost power, but Starbucks is open, so...
You got your coffee.
Yes.
The storm has made things even worse on Mount Hood, where they're searching for three climbers who've been missing since last weekend. Captain Chris Bernard of the Air Force Reserve's 304th Rescue Squadron has joined the effort with some high-tech gear.
We have a C-130 aircraft from the 152nd Airlift Wing in Reno, Nevada. This C-130 is equipped with SCAFE-View technology, which is an intelligence platform with both day and night reconnaissance capabilities.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
I'm with Mike.
Don't want a nation under the new media.
from our studios in New York City, this is the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
What are you people? On dope?
Welcome to the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. Well, it is Friday. Friday the 15th of December, 2006, 6 minutes past the hour. Coming up on the show this hour, the Pentagon says goodbye to Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld.
Leadership is not about doing what's easy. It's about doing what's right, even when it's hard.
And doing what's wrong, even when everyone in the world is waving their arms, yelling, "It's wrong! It's wrong!" That's leadership, Rumsfeld style. Also on the show this hour, we'll be joined by singer-songwriter Mark Arelli, here to play a great political belter from his new album, Hope and Other Casualties. Kent Jones and I will explore the question of why bad Santa is more expensive than good Santa. It's all coming up, but first, a quick update on a few of today's top headlines, starting as we do every day here on The Rachel Maddow Show with news from Iraq and life during wartime. Today, the American Prospect magazine profiles the new American Enterprise Institute right-wing think tank plan for Iraq. This is the plan that would dump tens of thousands of more bulls into the Iraqi China shop. It would up the number of American soldiers in Iraq by something on the order of 50,000. Why? Because it's the only thing the right wing can think to do besides staying the course or getting our troops out of there, an idea they have derided and now made politically impossible for right wingers by calling it cutting and running. So the right wing think tanks and John McCain and the rest of them have apparently conjured this idea that dumping more troops in will somehow help. Meanwhile, in Iraq, U.S. commanders on the ground say they don't need or want additional American troops in Iraq. Polls of Iraqi citizens say they don't want additional American troops in Iraq. They want American troops to leave Iraq as soon as possible. The Wall Street Journal reports today that the Iraqi prime minister has told the U.S. military in Iraq that the Iraqi government doesn't want any more American troops in Iraq. That's being echoed today by the Sunni vice president of Iraq. This is the guy who got to visit Washington this week to meet with President Bush 3 weeks earlier than planned. Here's MSNBC's Andrea Mitchell reporting on Tariq al-Hashimi's statement about U.S. troops in Iraq.
There were at least 15 Iraqis killed today throughout the country, mostly by
gunfire.
That's
not Andrea Mitchell. Chris, my apologies. Number two is the cut that we're looking for there. I'm sorry. It's totally my fault. I was drinking while putting the show together today.
Iraq's Sunni vice president says there is around-the-clock chaos in his country. Tariq al-Hashimi is blaming that on the United States, saying the dismantling of the Iraqi army in 2003 caused a security void. Al-Hashimi is also echoing an Iraq study group recommendation that sets a timetable for a withdrawal of U.S. troops without a hard deadline, as long as the situation on the ground permits.
So American commanders in Iraq don't want more troops. The American people don't want more troops there. The Iraqi people don't want more troops there. The Iraqi politicians and the Iraqi government don't want more troops there. It's just John McCain and a right-wing think tank. Why are we even entertaining this idiotic idea? Do you remember the appeal for redress petition? We reported on this when it first went up on the web. It's a petition for members of the active duty military to sign, petitioning members of Congress to withdraw American troops from Iraq. These are people who are active duty military. Over 1,000 members of the active duty military have now signed the statement, with more signing all the time. The Nation magazine is going to do a feature on this next week. You may recall in the Vietnam era that 1,300 active duty military personnel in 1969 signed an open letter in the New York Times opposing that war. One other war note for you today. The Pentagon today issued its new counterinsurgency manual. It was written by a military historian and a group of outside experts commissioned by both the Army and the Marine Corps. I have some non-war news today out of Iraq, and I'm sad to say that it's not good news. The Iraqi soccer team did make it to the finals of the Asian Games in Doha, but sadly they did not win in their gold medal game. Here's Aaron Katersky reporting from Baghdad for ABC.
No celebratory gunfire here in Baghdad. Iraq's national soccer team lost the Asia Games final match to Qatar 1-0. It was Iraq's first attempt at a gold medal in any sport in more than two decades. The team has been a real source of pride at this difficult time in the country's history. Shiites, Sunnis, and Kurds are on the roster and play together, the kind of unity lacking in the government.
The Iraqi team had to play without their best player in today's final. Their captain, Yunus Mahmoud, was suspended in the semifinal game for time wasting. The office of South Dakota Senator Tim Johnson put out a statement about his health today. They said the surgery he underwent late Wednesday night was considered a success, that he's in the ICU, intensive care unit, in critical but stable condition. They said that his progress thus far is encouraging. He's now getting regular CT scans to follow up on his surgery. News reports today also said that he had responded to the sound of his wife's voice and had been able to reach out for and hold her hand. Are you ready for your strange Dick Cheney story of the day? The vice president held his holiday party on Tuesday this week, and because he's Dick Cheney, even his vice presidential official holiday party had a corporate sponsor. Want to know who his corporate sponsor was?
It is nice.
It was nice. It was apparently a vodka from Kazakhstan. Yeah, Borat Land. Snow Queen Vodka from Kazakhstan was the official liquor donor at Cheney's 400-person holiday party. Speaking of Cheney's, did you hear what President Bush said about Mary Cheney being pregnant? He was asked about it for his People magazine interview. He said he is very happy for her and that Mary is going to be, quote, a loving soul to her child. A loving soul who Bush does not believe should be able to legally raise her child with her partner. Bush has said categorically he is against gay people being allowed to adopt children. Even if Dick's daughter is somebody he's happy for, who's going to be a loving soul, keep in mind that when he was a presidential candidate, when he was last pressed on this subject in 1999, he would not rule out the possibility that kids with gay parents should be taken out of their parents' homes by the state. Because some of those loving souls are apparently the bad kind of gay. But Mary Cheney, she's apparently the good kind of gay, or something. Bush also said in this same interview that he's sleeping very well. Thanks. Quote, better than people would assume. Good for him. Nothing's keeping him up at night. He's sleeping great. You know, when we have our news meeting in the afternoon here at the Rachel Maddow Show, we pick out all the stories we're going to do on the show. And I write up everything on a whiteboard that I carry around the office with me. And I'm a big nerd. It's the way I like to do it. And everything, because of that, everything gets a one or two word abbreviation just for the purposes of organizing the stories in the show at the meeting. That's how I like to do it. So the board says things like Iraq, troop strength, Pantex, it'll say, Cheney vodka, Cheney loving soul. Like, that's the kind of stuff that was up there today, right? Today, everybody at the meeting was horrified to come into the meeting and see that I had written up on the whiteboard in this segment of the show, quote, warm gas. Isn't that a disgusting phrase? Warm gas. The story is this. There's a consumer fraud lawsuit that's been filed in California trying to get gas stations to take into account the temperature at which they are selling gasoline. If it's a hot day and the gas heats up, it expands. Gas is sold by volume, so technically you're not getting your money's worth. Here's a soporific little report on the subject from reporter Dan Gretsch at Marketplace.
Joan Claybrook is president of the consumer advocacy organization Public Citizen.
The fuel, when it's warmer, expands, so you're paying for a little bit more fuel than actually you're getting into your tank in terms of energy.
Hot fuel costs individual drivers a few extra cents per gallon.
Pennies per person, but then if you drive a lot, it really does add up.
She says all told, hot gas costs U.S. drivers $2 billion bucks a year.
Sorry. Hot fuel. Yeah. Hot fuel, hot gas. I have to say, hot gas is actually less disgusting than warm gas. Warm gas is the worst, I think, if we had to rank those. So you know. Finally, news from the pest control kingdom brings us to Cedar Rapids, Iowa today, where that city's unusual municipal fauna challenge is crows. Apparently, it's not that unusual, really. USA Today profiles a bunch of towns having trouble with crows today. Crows live alone most of the year, but when it gets cold in winter, they form big flocks that forage for food during the day, and then they roost together in warm areas that have good lighting so they can see owls. They roost together starting about dusk. Owls are their main predator. A big flock of crows in an urban, well-lit place like a park is a problem because of the copious amount of crow poop that can accumulate in such places. In Lancaster, Pennsylvania, they've been using fireworks. In Riverton, Wyoming, they're trying to entice the crows to a rancher's land because he would be psyched to use the crow poop for fertilizer. But in Cedar Rapids, they're getting very creative and weird. Actually, they tried shotgun blasts to scare the crows away. They tried crow distress calls from loudspeakers. And now they've decided to push that idea that much further and get truly morbid. They are taking dead crows and tacking them up on boards and putting the boards up in the trees in the park with the dead crows stuck to them, hoping the crows will think, that's disgusting, and they won't roost there anymore. It's like the Freddy Krueger version of the traditional scarecrow. Warm gas. Those are my top stories this hour. But for sports and the biggest damn NASCAR resort you ever seen, here's Kent Jones.
Thanks, Rachel. In the NFL, San Francisco, Lawrence Ferlinghetti, Seattle, 24-14 last night. The loss kept the Seahawks from clinching the NFC West. Seattle, when you've decided which team is playing this week, let us know. I'm all turned around. In NASCAR, investors have announced a ginormous $600 million Dale Earnhardt Racetrack and Entertainment Complex, which will be built on 2,500 acres just north of Mobile, Alabama. Or in this case, Mobile. Get it? It will contain four racetracks, a 5,000-space RV park, a theme park, and a 7,000-seat arena are also planned, along with hotels, retail, restaurants, and music theaters. And I'm going to climb out on a limb here. There might even be some souvenir shirts and hats you can buy. Shake and bake, baby! And in baseball, smelling of equal parts gimmick and desperation, the Tampa Bay Devil Rays have announced that they will play a three-game series against the Texas Rangers at Disney's Wide World of Sports Complex next season near Orlando. Starting in the outfield, Huey, Louie, and Rocco Baldelli. Anyway, the stadium at Disney seats about 9,500, which, given it's the Devil Rays, should be plenty. For the record, the reason they're trying to drum up business is because the D-Rays averaged just 16,900 fans for home games last season, 29th among the 30 Major League teams. That's less than Kansas City, by the way. Pointing that out. Furthermore, Tampa Bay went 61-101 last season, have never had a winning record, and has finished last in the AL East in eight of its last nine seasons. So for the Devil Rays to become contenders, they pretty much have to play in a Magic Kingdom. Rachel?
Thank you, Ken. Shake and bake, baby!
Shake and bake, Dale Earnhardt. That's going to be fun, actually.
That's kind of awesome. I think that's much cooler than playing baseball at Disney.
Absolutely.
Yeah. 18 and a half minutes past the hour right now. It's the Rachel Maddow Show here, running on warm gas today.
Warm gas.
That's right. We got Ask Dr. Maddow coming up. Today's prize to give away on Ask Dr. Maddow. Today's Buried the Lead story, which comes to us from very, very, very deep in the heart of Texas. It's coming up next.
This is the Rachel Maddow Show.
You're smart. You got wonderful bones, great eyes, and you dress really interesting.
On Air America Radio.
One of your best friends. Hey, yeah.
Whining about gas prices. It's good that it costs a lot, and not just because the sales tax will help pay for our twice-a-year governor elections. It's also good if it makes you think of walking the three blocks from your house to Del Taco instead of taking the Land Cruiser. Gasoline costs a lot because we have to find it, bribe or kill the people who live on top of it. extract it, refine it, ship it, and pump it. You'll pay $2 a gallon, and you'll like it because you know what the alternative is, riding on the bus with poor people. New rule, call things what they are. If your morning coffee contains crushed ice, whipped cream, and caramel, it's a milkshake.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
I wanted it all. Intelligence, great looks, physical strength, inner beauty, even social consciousness. Friends said that I wanted too much, but I wouldn't settle. And now, I have it all.
This woman is talking about her Renewal by Anderson replacement windows from Hall's Window Center. If it looks better, lasts longer, and outperforms the competition, it's gotta be Anderson. The only windows and doors to receive Green Seal certification for energy efficiency and environmentally friendly manufacturing. Now you too can have it all. For a limited time, get 7 Renewal by Anderson windows and 1 Anderson PermaShield patio door from Hall's Window Center for just $69.95. Left channel listeners save an extra $150. Go to HallsWindowCenter.com. Click on the green seal for your coupon. Visit Hall's Window Center today on Business Park Drive in Sacramento and now in Roseville on Roseville Parkway next to BJ's. Call 1-800-76-HALLS. Smud financing available. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends September 30th.
The Morning Retort with Scott and Sam.
To understand it.
Mitt Romney.
What drives people?
Massachusetts governor. If he can't protect his own citizens from tunnels, how will he protect you from terrorists? Done. Campaign is dead. See how easy it was? It was that easy.
See, that's the problem on the left. You're the problem right there. You think you get all the answers to all the little questions that does not drive a lot of people outside of California, outside of both coasts, outside of California and New York. Northeast. I mean, this is not the world. This is not the center of the universe, Mr. Sims.
Mitt Romney gets the nomination. The tunnels win. Think about it. Tourists, Terra, Earth, tunnels.
Do the math, Scott! It's very erotic. I'm being turned on by all this talk.
Scott and Sims, mornings 5:30 to 9 on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Should you break up with your boyfriend if he's joined a cult? It's time for Ask Dr. Maddow. Rachel Maddow is a doctor. Just not that kind of doctor.
So Dr. Rachel Maddow is perhaps best known as the world's leading authority on warm gas. Her greatest joy comes from sharing her vast trove of general knowledge with our expansive listeners. Warm gas. So if there's something you've been dying to know, give us a call at 212-871-8173 or send us an email at maddowonline.com. Today's question comes from Anne in Pennsylvania.
How did the Dalmatian come to be associated with the fire department?
Good question.
Exactly.
In the 1700s, Dalmatians were used to protect horses that pulled stagecoaches in England, as well as to guard horses from horse thieves. Typically, two Dalmatians would run next to the horses as they pulled a stagecoach. And if other dogs tried to run out and scare the horses, the Dalmatian team would chase them away. They were basically bred to be dogs that were comfortable around horses. And when firemen first got themselves organized to fight fires in big cities, fire trucks were drawn by teams of horses. Just like firemen, firehouse horses were required to work long hours, as well as, you know, wait at the fire station for a long period of time, waiting for fires to start. And this waiting around could cause a horse to get bored and impatient and to act disorderly. So firemen would then also have an additional reason to keep the Dalmatians around because they would have a calming effect on the horses. When a fire did occur, the Dalmatian was also used on the scene as a guard dog to make sure that no equipment was stolen. So that's it originated nice. Because of Dalmatians being good horse dogs, but then ultimately Dalmatians are still found in many firehouses today because of their loyalty and their long history of working with firemen.
That's very interesting. Thank you, Anne. Thank you, Doctor. Remember, if you have a question for Dr. Maddow, call us at 212-871-8173 or send us an email at mattoonline.com for Ask Dr. Matto.
Thank you, Kent. Thank you, Anne. This week's Ask Dr. Matto winner is Dean from Connecticut, who asked the question, what is the difference between partly sunny and mostly cloudy?
Yes.
Once again, though, we have a winner who did not leave us his address.
Oops.
Yeah, so Dean, you got to get in touch with us. Give us a call or send us an email from mattoonline.com and give us your address so we can send you your excellent prize, which is a copy of my personal copy of Scott Turow's new novel, Limitations, which
nice.
Is awesome,
very
and
good.
The new Mark Arely CD, which is called Hope and Other Casualties, as well as a glossy autographed photo of Kent Jones. If you want to win a fabulous prize like this, call 212-871-817-817-3. Thank you. Give us your Ask Dr. Matto question. Also, leave us your address. We promise we won't sell it to anybody. We'll only use it if we're going to send you stuff.
Exactly.
Today's Burying the Lead story, Kent, comes to us. Actually, it comes to us from this news story.
Executives with the Southern California Fence Building Company have pleaded guilty to hiring illegal immigrants. Yesterday, the Riverside-based Golden State Fence Company admitted in San Diego federal court to knowingly hiring illegal immigrants. Their plea agreement includes a fine of nearly $5 million. The deal also allows prosecutors to seek prison terms of at least 6 months against the company's founder and president who ran the Oceanside office.
Okay, so that's the news story. It's from an NBC affiliate in San Diego, KNSD.
Mm-hmm.
This big fence building company hiring illegal immigrants, a $5 million fine. They're going to throw the owner in jail. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
What did they leave out? What did they bury, perhaps,
they
in this story?
They buried something.
The Golden State Fence Company's work includes building the border fence between California and Mexico.
Yeah.
Oops. Yeah, you know, this whole border fence idea is really stupid, but if even the company you're hiring to build the border fence feels like they need to hire undocumented immigrants, maybe you ought to think about the big picture here.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I'll also tell you that the Texas Comptroller reported this week that illegal immigrants put $400 million more into Texas state coffers than they take out. Oh, so much for the border states driving the immigration issue.
Do
27 after.
A liberal dose of the truth.
Graceland. Tickets for their show are available through tickets.com. I'm Michelle Shockley, going places on AM 1320 Sacramento's Left Channel.
Play perfectly. I just joined Cash Creek's Cash Club and I received $100 in free bonus play.
Play profitably.
I just joined Cash Club and automatically got an instant shot at $1 million.
Play endlessly.
Cash Creek has thousands of the newest, hottest slots and bonus play just keeps the action going.
Play bonusfully.
only at Cache Creek, Northern California's only AAA Four Diamond Casino Resort. Just join the Cache Club and you can start out with up to $500 in free bonus play. It's like playing with their money. Well, not like it. You really are playing with their money. Plus, don't forget the instant shot at $1 million. And you can't play on an empty stomach, so they're giving away over 150 $25 dining comps every day. So you can play and dine on their dollar. Cache Creek Casino Resort. Well played. Visit by taking I-80 to 505 North and 16 West. For tickets, visit CacheCreek.com or any Ticketmaster outlet.
Phones in movie theaters. Please, you're not a cardiologist on call. You're a putz whose babysitter wants to know where the ketchup is. And then you tell her in the middle of the movie. Sometimes it's so loud in the theater I can barely hear what the black people are yelling at the screen. There is a simple solution. Put your cell phone on vibrate and then up your... New rule, no more celebrating gastric bypass. Carney Wilson, Al Roker, and now Star Jones are all being heralded by the media for stapling their stomachs shut. They shouldn't be. They're not making a brave choice to change. They're giving money to doctors to reroute their ability to turn food into crap.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Tubes. Why? Enormous tubes. Massive tubes. It really is the internet consumer bill of rights. Because you got tangled up with all these things that are going on the internet commercially. The world has turned against this. If your own personal internet, that is you and me. You and me. Tubes. The internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
It's a series of tubes.
Hey, listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? You want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
New rule. Prince Harry is going to hurt someone. Look at this kid. He's a thundering ball of rage. His mom's dead. His father dates rotted tree bark. His brother gets to be king, and he's destined to spend the rest of his life being photographed doing nothing. Arrest him before he kills a woman. New rule. Country music stars can't be authors. Charlie Daniels' new book, Ain't No Rag, Freedom, Family, and the Flag, is a collection of musings by noted white trash icon Charlie Daniels on subjects ranging from American flags to American flag bumper stickers to what to do to a hippie if you catch him trying to burn your flag. Before this book, I was ambivalent on the issue of flag burning. Now I find myself reconsidering the question of book burning.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
I found one that I like, but it doesn't say that it gets NOAA weather alerts. It says it gets SAME, same weather alerts. And for the life of me, I spent about an hour and a half on this today. I can't figure out if a same weather alert means that she'll be getting the little NOAA things. So if you're out there and you know what that is and you know whether or not I should buy that scanner for Linda, maybe you could post something about it at mattoonline.com and you would help make my Christmas more merry. Thank you very much. This has been a private service announcement from the Rachel Maddow Show. A couple of news stories we're keeping an eye on today. Today's the day we finally got to say goodbye to Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. Bye! At a farewell ceremony at the Pentagon, Bush praised Rumsfeld as someone who knows how to lead. He was also quick to point out the defense secretary's long career in Washington.
Don Rumsfeld is the only man to have served as Secretary of Defense for two presidents in two different centuries.
That's called forced laughter. Donald Rumsfeld also gave a speech today.
This is a time of great consequence. Our task is to make the right decisions today so that future generations will not have to make much harder decisions tomorrow.
Like maybe having to rebuild the American military that you destroyed tomorrow? Or maybe having to consider reinvading Iraq 4 years after you totally botched it? Like that? Is that what you mean? Rumsfeld's resignation was announced the day after Democrats won control of both houses of Congress last month. His replacement is former CIA chief Robert Gates. Robert Gates is due to be sworn in Monday as the country's 22nd defense secretary. Also, President Bush awarded 10 people the Medal of Freedom at the White House today. Former Transportation Secretary Norm Mineta, blues singer B.B. King, former New York Times columnist William Safire were among those presented with the nation's highest civilian award. The honor was established in 1945 by President Truman to honor service in World War II. In 1963, President John F. Kennedy reintroduced the award for service during peacetime. Since then, several high-profile figures such as Frank Sinatra and activist Rosa Parks have received the award. Of course, President Bush also gave the award to CIA Director George Slam Dunk Tenet and even Paul Bremer, the head of the disastrous Coalition Provisional Authority in Iraq. Hopefully, giving the award to those two guys hasn't totally blown it and spoiled the medal for everyone. My next guest is Mark Arelli. His latest CD is called Hope and Other Casualties. He's also playing tonight in New York City on the Lower East Side at the Living Room. He'll be there at 9 p.m. Earlier in the show, we heard a little preview of some of Mark's music. He stopped by the Air America Studios this afternoon. I convinced him to play one of my favorites from an album of lullabies he's got out right now called Innocent When You Dream. But the songs on the album Hope and Other Casualties, which came out this year, are getting a lot of attention, and they're decidedly not something that would rock you to sleep. A few of the songs on Hope and Other Casualties are songs with a definite political message. It's music that speaks directly to 9/11, to the idea of terrorism, to the idea of war and fear and the Bush administration. But when I asked Mark Arelli if it was a hard decision to put politics into his music, to put political songs on pop records, he said for him it would be impossible not to.
In everything that I do musically, I just try and be really honest with my audience and try not to talk down to them or assume they can't handle something, you know, out of the box.
Yeah.
And this basically just translates into, you know, me just doing and saying and singing about whatever I want to be singing about.
Yeah.
And trusting that, you know, the people that don't like it, they can kind of handle it or they can go away for a record and come back the next time around.
Mm-hmm.
But I think to keep the political stuff off, you know, the record or out of the songs, it would almost be impossible. It's just a process of being honest with myself and with, you know, the listeners and They're really just songs about what I love, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm writing about my wife. Sometimes I'm writing about my country. You know, to me, they're all kind of love songs, but there's just a more political element to some of them.
Yeah. Well, it's congratulations on Hope and Other Casualties. Congratulations.
Thanks.
On Innocent When You Dream. Thanks for being here. And what are you going to play for us?
It's a song called Seeds of Peace.
Mark Arelli is my guest. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio.
Propped up by a culture of fear. patriotic to protest or even to question. Have we learned nothing from history for the last couple of years? And the rain pours down on the our mission, and he twisted the facts till he knew it would pass for the truth. Vengeance can fill any fool with conviction. Ah, but he can't wash the blood of the fallen from his cowboy boots.
Marcarelli playing Seeds of Peace from his latest album, which is called Hope and Other Casualties. When I found out that Mark was able to come in today, I asked him if he would consider playing something that was seasonally appropriate, since Hanukkah starts tonight and we're into the Christmas season. And he said that he was not going to be able to play the one Christmas song he's ever put on one of his records, but I think Seeds of Peace is pretty darn good for a holiday song, as it goes. You can get more information about Hope and Other Casualties and Marcarelli's music at our website, mattoonline.com. We've linked to his website today. He's also playing tonight on the Lower East Side at the Living Room, a 9 p.m. show. You're listening to The Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. It's 46 minutes past the hour right now. Stay tuned. Kent Jones joins me next.
There's no need to fear. Underdog is here.
Underdog. Underdog.
The Rachel Underdog. Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
To which side do you dress?
New rule, one dear to my heart. Lap dancing is a First Amendment right. The L.A. City Council this week banned lap dancing. What is next? Burning books? Lap dancers, or Imagineers, as I like to call them, are artists drawing you into their fantasy world, much like a skilled novelist does. If novelists had perfectly waxed bikini lines. But more importantly, lap dancers are expressing an idea called hope. The hope that someday a skinny young woman with artificial breasts and a navel piercing will want to have sex with you. And without that hope, millions of American men might just as well throw themselves into the sea.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
Sunny day with tonight's AccuTerra forecast.
And folks, wasn't it just a perfect day for a terror alert? Bone chilling in the morning, clear and present danger in the afternoon, tapering off into cold sweats at night. Tomorrow, AccuTerra is predicting 100% chance of a really big terror alert to take our mind off bad economic news. An Al-Qaeda cell coming down from Canada into here, the Great Lakes regions, the folks in the Detroit and Saginaw. You might want to put on that extra layer of Kevlar. Our exclusive AccuTerra radar is picking up a lot of chatter out here in the Denver area, so stay away from chemical plants, nuclear facilities, and of course, the French fries at Arby's. Here in the West, some light showers of ammonium nitrate, a little sarin gas are possible in the Los Angeles area, but don't expect loss of life. The Santa Anas are going to push all that nasty gunk out. Here's your 5-day. Yellow, bluish yellow, yellow again, yellow gradually becoming orange, and orange back into yellow. And we've got an orangish red weekend on tap, so be sure to have plenty of bottled water and canned goods on hand. And that's fair. All right, make it a great day.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
New rule. Jewish people have to start... The Jewish population in America dropped 5% in the last decade, which may explain why this country's finances have gone to... Breed, you sons of Abraham, breed! We need you. Israel needs you. Kobe Bryant, Robert Blake, and Phil Spector need you. Without Jews, who's going to write all those sitcoms about blacks and Hispanics? New rule. Living in a box for 6 weeks doesn't make you a magician, it makes you homeless.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
I wanted it all. Intelligence, great looks, physical strength, inner beauty, even social consciousness. Friends said that I wanted too much, but I wouldn't settle. And now, I have it all.
This woman is talking about her Renewal by Anderson replacement windows from Hall's Window Center. If it looks better, lasts longer, and outperforms the competition, it's gotta be Anderson. The only windows and doors to receive Green Seal certification for energy efficiency and environmentally friendly manufacturing. Now you too can have it all. For a limited time, get 7 Renewal by Anderson windows and 1 Anderson PermaShield patio door from Hall's Window Center for just $69.95. Left channel listeners save an extra $150. Go to HallsWindowCenter.com. Click on the green seal for your coupon. Visit Hall's Window Center today on Business Park Drive in Sacramento and now in Roseville on Roseville Parkway next to BJ's. Call 1-800-76-HALLS. Smud financing available. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends September 30th.
No show. It's
well after 50 minutes.
Past the hour. Now, it's Kent Jones Now. With Kent Jones. Now.
Hello, Dateline Belgium. State television broke into regular programming late Wednesday with an urgent bulletin. The Dutch-speaking half of Belgium had declared independence from the French-speaking half of Belgium, and King Albert and Queen Paula had fled the country. Fuzzy pictures from the military airport showed dark silhouettes of a royal entourage boarding a plane. People panicked. Embassies called Belgian authorities to find out what was going on. Foreign journalists scrambled to get confirmation. Dogs and cats sleeping together. Pandemonium. And then, a half hour after the station flashed this message. This is fiction.
Wow.
Oops. The hoax astonished everyone who assumed Belgium had no sense of humor whatsoever. The network, RTBF, defended the program, saying it showed the importance of debate on the future of Belgium and the tensions between Dutch-speaking Flanders in the north and French-speaking Wallonia. Everyone else gave it a big old thumbs down, said Senate Chair Anne-Marie Lizen. This fiction was seen as a reality and created a catastrophic image of the country, said Vice Premier Didier Reynders. It is totally unacceptable, said the royal family. It was in bad taste, said Ashton Kutcher. Belgium, consider yourself punked. The ruse reminded some of Orson Welles' 1938 War of the Worlds broadcast, where thousands panicked when they heard that Martians had landed in New Jersey. They have not, by the way. I can't stress that enough. Although you might want to avoid the 287 exit at Metuchen. This is Kent Jones for the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio. Vigilance.
They waited a half an hour to tell anybody that
half an hour. They ran all these images that made it look like the place had split in half.
Wow.
Not so nice.
I wonder if War of the Worlds has an international reputation. I wonder if people all around the world know about our little problem with the War of the Worlds thing.
Oh, I imagine so.
Well, I mean there's Chris is excited because there's the movie. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the radio thing. You're like, dude, yeah, everybody's seen that movie. Is that what you were about to say, Chris?
Yes,
I can see you jumping up and down. Going,
but
everybody saw that. Yeah. No, the radio thing. Yeah.
Yeah, so don't tell big whoppers on the air pretending that it's news.
Yeah.
Unless you're a comedian.
Or the president.
Or the president, or, you know, the state-run TV station, in this case. Oops.
Kent, I got a pet story for you today.
Monkey!
Monkey! I wanted to play an elephant sound effect to replace the monkey today.
Oh, you see, usually I have one, but
really?
my lips are dry. No, I can't do it.
Wow, your whole face goes... Wow.
No.
It looks like you're stuffing a whole other person's face inside your face.
I'm really not doing that, but I at times can do the elephant sound effect.
See, I went through about 17 different elephant sound effects, and they all just sounded like somebody spraining something. None of them sounded elephant-y.
Like me just now.
Well, yours was yours sounded less sprainy and more squeaky. Anyway, in northeast India, there is a rogue elephant.
Oh.
There's actually been a lot of rogue elephants in this area of northeast India. This one in particular, they say, has twice evaded attempts to kill him. He's killed people. He has trampled people. He's a threat to life and property.
Fugitive.
A 10-foot-tall, tuskless bull elephant.
Nice.
That local villagers in this area of northeast India, they've decided to try to get some international attention to the cause of their rogue elephant and all of the destruction this elephant is causing by naming the elephant Osama bin Laden.
I just don't spend that much time.
Wow.
And, you know, again, I don't know where he is.
See, they believe the press.
Osama bin Elephant.
Yes.
They think...
I repeat what I said.
They think because Osama bin Laden became very famous after 9/11 and everybody talked about him, the whole dead and alive thing, that that meant that people would actually go after him. This ensures that he will be talked about a lot, but ignored.
Yes. We'll see videos of the elephant occasionally in a cave.
The elephant will now have more followers.
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
Check Al Jazeera for the videos.
Apparently, this isn't the first time this has happened, that, that villagers in this area have named a few different elephants Osama bin Laden since 9/11, and they consider them terroristic.
All right. I don't think it's helping to capture the terrorists.
No! Terrorist elephants. Another story today from India. You know, one of the stories that's gotten a lot of attention in the mainstream press here this week is the shocking news that Americans are fat and watch too much TV.
Wow.
I know.
No
way. Newsflash. Yeah, we considered canceling everything about the war and talking about that instead.
Yeah.
But then we realized that everybody already knew we were fat and watched too much TV. But the new details on just how fat we are and just how much TV we watch this week got a lot of attention on the, you know, network morning shows and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
In India, they have also found that they've got... they've got an increasing problem with diabetes, hypertension, and obesity.
Yep.
And this is not nearly this is more of a story in India than it is here, because it is a bit, it's more of a shocker. In order to counteract the rising tide of heart disease and diabetes and obesity in India, the health minister has disclosed plans as of yesterday to introduce mandatory yoga in schools.
There's an idea.
Yeah. Mandatory yoga.
That's putting it together.
Yeah.
Mandatory. You will do the downward facing dog now, young man.
Relax. Yeah, I know. I know that was a good one. I will also tell you that the Wall Street Journal today had an interesting feature on a new trend in corporate parties.
Mm-hmm.
Talent bookings.
Yoga?
Yeah.
Just forced
yoga. People love it, especially in the finance world. No. The talent booking companies who are doing holiday parties this year report a new trend. They are booking bad Santas to go to corporate parties. Santas who promise to show up smelling of booze. They promise to complain about the food and to throw presents if they have to give them out at all.
Oh, prankish.
Pulling down their pants and stealing the food and being mean to people and starting fights. Apparently, bad Santa is a very in-demand talent this year. The thing I don't understand, if you want to book a normal Santa, it costs $175 for the night. If you want to book a bad Santa, $600 for a half hour.
Bar bill.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. Cleaning. Yeah. It's 57 after. Happy Hanukkah. It's the Rachel Maddow Show. Happy Friday. Happy weekend. We'll see you on Monday. Have a good one.
The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
Kidney. The slow death of a convicted killer in Florida Wednesday night has prompted Governor Jeb Bush to suspend executions while a commission reviews the protocols for lethal injection. And a federal judge in California has declared that state's method of lethal injection unconstitutional. Richard Dieter is a leading death penalty opponent.
California ruling is the result of extensive studies, ones that Florida hasn't conducted but apparently now is going to undertake. And so this is a ruling that's had the best experts in the country come together, and now they're going to say whether this can proceed any further.
It probably can, says CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen.
Either one of these things does away with the death penalty in Florida or in California. The problem is not with the death penalty itself here. The problem is with how it is implemented, the way that the lethal injection is done. We saw it a couple of days ago in Florida. It has problems, and that's exactly the sort of thing that the California judge was worried about, and that's why he stopped the whole program there.
In Florida, a medical examiner found that the lethal injection had been botched. The needles passed through the veins in Angel Nieves Diaz's arm, pumping chemicals into his flesh where they were slow to absorb. It took more than half an hour for Diaz to die. They rolled out full military honors for Donald Rumsfeld's final workday as Secretary of Defense. CBS News correspondent Mark Noller reports.
On the parade grounds at the Pentagon, they fired 19 cannon rounds as part of the formal and fond farewell to Donald Rumsfeld. And the man who asked him to step down from his post as Defense Secretary led in the tributes.
Donald Rumsfeld's strong leadership has earned him my admiration and deep respect.
But not enough to keep his job. Rumsfeld had become a political liability and the principal target for those vilifying the president's Iraq policies. Mr. Bush felt he needed someone new running the war. And though he said America is better off because of Rumsfeld's leadership and service, Robert Gates will be sworn in Monday morning to take over as defense chief. Mark Noller, CBS News, the White House.
Gates travels to Iraq soon. CBS News has learned that Gates is expected to approve a request from the commanders in Iraq for more troops, and 3,500 members of the 82nd Airborne will be on standby in Kuwait after the holidays. New twist in the Duke University lacrosse case. It came out in court today that the alleged victim is pregnant. CBS News correspondent Jim Krasula was there.
District Attorney Mike Nifong says the woman who has accused three Duke lacrosse players of raping her believes she became pregnant at least 2 weeks after the alleged incident. A judge has ordered a paternity test, although Nifong doubts any of the three is the father. Defense lawyer Joe Cheshire doesn't think much of the prosecution's case.
I think there is nothing there. I think this is a false accusation, and I think this case ought to go away.
Defense lawyers have also asked for a change of venue in the case. Jim Crisula, CBS News, Durham, North Carolina.
The Dow, 28 points higher. This is CBS News.
I know not how to express my devotion to so fair a form. I want a brighter word than bright, a fairer word than fair. I almost wish we were butterflies and lived but three summer days. Three such days with you I could fill with more delight than 50 common years could ever contain. This is how the poet John Keats said, I love you. This Christmas, say something just as beautiful without saying a word. A diamond is forever.
The big one, really big, really
don't
big.
Don't miss the big one at Kohl's this Friday and Saturday. It's our biggest sale of the season. Save extra during power hours, featuring 100 night owl and early bird specials. Friday, 3 p.m. to midnight, and Saturday, 6 a.m. to 1 p.m. Save an extra 15% on diamond jewelry, already 60% off, and all toys already 10 to 50% off. Get an extra 10% off all kitchen electrics, already 15 to 50% off, and a digital camera, only $89.99. It's the big one this Friday and Saturday. Kohl's, expect great things.
CBS News correspondent John Harchie reports the Homeland Security Department is proposing new regulations for hazmats traveling by rail.
The government's new rule is intended to tighten security for hazardous cargo being shipped by railroads. Part of it is better tracking to make sure someone knows the location of each rail car with a potentially toxic substance and has control over it.
We do not want to have a seam in which one company leaves a car, another company fails to pick it up, and the car is sitting there unattended and unknown to the authorities.
Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff says a toxic emission from a terrorist attack is among the most serious risks facing America. John Harchie, CBS News, Washington.
In Allentown, Pennsylvania, 43-year-old Julie Figueroa has drawn a sentence of up to 4 years for endangering the welfare of her children. She forced the 12-year-old boy and 13-year-old girl to take provocative nude photos of her. In court today, Figueroa wore jeans embroidered on the back with booty and licious. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Jamba Juice. No.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cash Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cash Fever Jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cash Fever Jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at CashCreek.com. So join Cash Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
Politically Direct with David Bender. David's guests tonight are former governor of Oregon, John Kitzhaber, Joe Trippi, and director for the Young People for the American Way, Yada Peng.
I would live like a free man, shake the chains from my soul, change my direction to heal my reflection, stepping out into the gold.
And welcome to the program. Joining us today is the former governor of Oregon, John Kitzhaber. Governor Kitzhaber was governor from 1995 to 2003, and he joins us today on Politically Direct. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
Governor, you're here actually because you're doing something that some of us around the country have started to look at, and it is extraordinarily impressive. It's called the Archimedes Movement. Now, that's a very grand title, and Archimedes famous for saying if you give him a lever, he can move the world. What is the Archimedes Movement?
Well, it's really a grassroots effort to try to bring about substantial systematic reform in the U.S. healthcare system by organizing people at the state level.
Nothing like a modest goal. You were very involved in healthcare. You are a physician.
Yes.
And you were very involved in healthcare during your two terms as governor, having brought in a plan actually that at that time was sort of a landmark plan in the state of Oregon.
Yeah, the Oregon Health Plan, which we enacted back in 1989, actually made Oregon the focal point of the national health policy debate. And at the time, we had less than 3 million people. And the reason, and actually this is relevant to the Archimedes Movement, the reason we gained such exposure, really, is that we passed a bill that was illegal. We simply said we're not going to be constrained by the existing structure of Medicaid.
Sounds like George W. Bush, too.
Well, I hope not.
No, very different. You knew going in that you needed to get a waiver from the federal government.
Well, the problem is that we have the eligibility and financing structure of the U.S. healthcare system, of which Medicaid is a part, was created in response to circumstances that existed 40 or 50 years ago.
Right.
And the problem is that the economic and demographic circumstances have changed dramatically, but the major public and private elements of our healthcare system remain locked in the middle of the 20th century. So what we really did in 89 is said, look, the Medicaid rules and regulations were created in 1965, but you know, this is 1989. So we rewrote it and passed it, even though we knew we couldn't implement it without getting a waiver. But the process of seeking that waiver forced the federal government to defend or examine the current Medicaid program against a more rational, more equitable way to provide services to low-income citizens.
And what I'm struck by is this model that you've brought to bear in the Archimedes Movement, which is the idea of sort of this creative tension. The idea that in order to examine these old ways of thinking, you have to challenge them up front. You have to come into conflict in order to get some kind of change to occur.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I realized when I was governor is that you cannot fix this at the state level, whether you're Oregon or Massachusetts or California. It's not a Medicaid problem. It's not a state problem. It's a national problem, and it's a system problem. But no one in Congress is willing to look at the major elements of the program because of the constituencies that have grown up around these programs. So you need to get a random factor inside the Beltway. And so what we're trying to do with the Archimedes Movement is the same thing we did with the Oregon Health Plan, except looking at the whole system, not just the Medicaid program.
Now, you've started off by articulating a vision. Let me read that now. It's to maximize the health of the population by creating a sustainable system which reallocates the public resources, emphasize public resources, spent on health care, in a way that ensures universal access to a defined set of effective health services. Now, interestingly here, what you've started off with is not a solution.
Right.
You started off with a goal, which, and I think that's very different than most attempts to alter public policy, which are very sort of going from back to front.
Well, if you think about it, we tend to confuse means with ends. If you look at that vision, it doesn't speak to the major ideologic thrusts that get us into conflict in the health.
Single payer.
It doesn't deal with single payer or employer mandate. It doesn't speak to the role of the employer or the insurance company. It doesn't embrace or reject any of those. It simply says, look, when the dust clears, we want a system that produces health for all of our citizens and that's economically sustainable.
Yeah.
Now, clearly, what we debate about mostly in the U.S. is means to an end, and we forget completely about what we want the healthcare system to produce. So we're starting with consensus on a vision, and we're going to have to get into the means to the end, but we separate the two, which is, I think, very powerful.
Well, it's really a revolutionary approach to public policy, which is to say we need to figure out where we want to go. And what was the line from Thomas Pynchon?
As long as they can keep you asking the wrong questions, they don't have to worry about the answers.
I want to say that this is something that I've been troubled by almost from the beginning. I've been in politics for a very long time, and it's always struck me that one of the fundamental premises of any society should be the health of its people. We've organized in this nation around defense. We guarantee in local communities that we'll have police, we'll have fire, any kind of emergency care, and education. We've said to people that you absolutely have a right to educate your children. You'd think that the fundamental premise that the people have a right to be healthy would almost supersede all of that, yet it's somehow fallen through the cracks.
Well, I mean, I think that I would rephrase it. I would say in America, everyone should have an equal opportunity to be healthy because that implies access to a certain level of effective health care services. And I can tell you as a physician, health care and health are not synonymous. Secondly, in addition to access to medical treatment, you need a house. You need a good education. You need a clean environment. You need economic opportunity. You also need to assume some personal responsibility for the impact of your own individual choices on your health. So it breaks it down into the real contributing factors to health.
And these component parts, which you talk about in the Archimedes Movement, and let me say it's archimedesmovement.org for people interested in going to this website.
Actually, we've got a simpler domain name now because no one can spell Archimedes Movement. No one can spell my name either. It's joinam.org.
Joinam.org.
Yeah.
And I encourage people to go to the website, and we'll put a link to it on our own politicallydirectradio.com. But, Governor, this whole idea of the component parts of health, that's something else that you examine in this movement, which is to say that the system itself, even giving access to a broken healthcare system, the delivery is fundamentally broken, is not enough to deal with the health crisis, not the healthcare crisis.
Yeah, you know, I think Massachusetts is a great example. It's gotten a lot of play lately, commend them for their courage and innovation to get this through the legislature. But the fact is that they've essentially expanded access and figured out how to pay for it. But unless you ask access to what, it's like trying to figure out the cost of a banquet without a menu. And the real cost in the system, the huge inefficiencies in the system, lie in how we define a healthcare benefit and how that benefit is delivered. So certainly we need access, but what we need access to is not the current system. We need access to a system that produces health, not just lies in the weeds and treats illness and injury after it happens.
And what's extraordinary about what I see you doing here with this movement is to create a context, a national dialogue, and to create the will for change, because obviously change does not happen in a vacuum. And with so many of these sacred cows, Medicare, Medicaid, all of the things that people take comfort in because they're familiar. Even raising the question can sometimes end the debate. And what you're doing here, as I understand it, is to create a context where people are talking among themselves about change.
Yeah, we're not, you know, basically if you add up, just in Oregon, what we spend on Medicare, Medicaid, and then the public subsidy that is involved with workplace-based coverage.
$6.3 billion, is that
right? It's about $6.3 billion. So what we're asking is, look, we're not starting out by saying, look, we're going to blow up Medicare and Medicaid and destroy our system of workplace-based coverage. What we are saying is, look, if we started over again with the realities of the 21st century rather than the realities of the middle of the last century, would we allocate those resources in the same way or would it look differently? Would we go about creating a system that puts U.S. employers at a competitive disadvantage with employers in other countries who don't have to pick up that cost? You know, would we create a system where working Americans without health insurance coverage would subsidize the health care needs of wealthy people over the age of 65? I don't think so.
And that, again, is a revolutionary approach to challenge the fundamental assumptions. Waving a wand, saying if we had it all to do over again, if we could start from scratch, and you have all of this money, how would you spend it? Now, that's something that when we're dealing with incremental reform, which is sadly how most politics has played out, people never have the opportunity to do. So you're talking about something, and I was struck again in reading about the goal of the Archimedes Movement is to sort of bring a new approach to all debates on public policy. But the idea of a movement is to have people reexamine the way in which they're engaged in a debate about issues in this country.
Yeah, you know, one of the lessons I took away from my governorship is that, you know, our politics today have become not only bitterly partisan, but very transactional. You know, lower my taxes and I'll vote for you. You know, cover my prescription drugs and I'll vote for you. And
send me a tax rebate
yeah.
and I'll...
And, yeah. and the difficulty with those transactions is that they're all about me and they have nothing to do with us. They're about what I can get, not what I can give. And you can't solve these large, complex problems with that kind of transactional politics because it erodes any sense of common purpose. So what we're trying to do really is to create a new space for engagement outside the traditional legislative process that empowers individuals to say, look, we don't have to be constrained by the status quo. We're going to reinvent it. What's it look like? Now, ultimately, we're going to have to build consensus within this state to get that framework of design principles, if you will, enacted. Because that's what we can send back to Congress and force this debate through the consideration of waivers.
We're talking with Governor John Kitzhaber on Politically Direct. We need to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? You want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
About gas prices. It's good that it costs a lot, and not just because the sales tax will help pay for our twice-a-year governor elections. It's also good if it makes you think of walking the three blocks from your house to Del Taco instead of taking the Land Cruiser. Gasoline costs a lot because we have to find it, bribe or kill the people who live on top of it. Extract it, refine it, ship it, and pump it. You'll pay $2 a gallon, and you'll like it because you know what the alternative is. Riding on the bus with poor people. New rule. Call things what they are. If your morning coffee contains crushed ice, whipped cream, and caramel, it's a milkshake.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
presents Politically Direct with David Bender.
Back. We're talking with former Oregon Governor John Kitzhaber, who's the founder of the Archimedes Movement. Governor, before the break, we were talking about the vision. I want to talk a little bit about realizing the vision, which is your phase two of this. The implementation of this is pretty difficult in terms of just the mechanics. You're talking about getting people to rethink basic assumptions. How do you plan on going about implementing this idea?
Well, once we get agreement on our vision, we're essentially going to get agreement on a number of what we call them design principles. But essentially, they speak to the means to the end. You know, whether you want transparency and accountability, what you want the system to reflect in terms of values and outcomes, not just for individuals, but for us as a community and a society.
What are you doing to get agreement? What's the process?
Well, we're using our website as the initial point of contact, but we've got some sophisticated community building software that allows people to get right offline and have conversations in their communities. We're doing outreach to communities that don't have access to the Internet. We have an outreach to our Hispanic community here in Oregon, for example. So it's trying to generate a very rich discussion. Not of the details of the benefit, not of the details of the delivery system, but the general principles that you want the sideboards, if you will, through which you want to achieve that vision. And then we intend to take that vision and those principles and put that into a legislative concept. And that's what we'll put on the ballot and also try to get passed to the legislature.
In the state of Oregon, the way that works would be a ballot initiative in 2008,
yes,
potentially. Prior to that, in 2007, next year, there could be something that would be discussed and debated in the legislature.
Yeah, our hope is that 08 is basically to just have a backstop if the legislature doesn't act. But our hope is that the legislature will adopt this framework, will send it back to Congress, and, of course, both of our U.S. senators now are in Senate Finance, which is the Committee of Jurisdiction. Bob Packwood was chair of that when we did the Oregon Health Plan waiver. So really what we're doing is we're basically saying, okay, give us waivers so we can essentially create a kind of system with that outcome and with these principles, very transparent, that has really engaged citizens. And it forces Congress to compare the current really broken, unsustainable, and inequitable system with a more rational, more sustainable, more compassionate and effective way to provide those services. That creates the tension. Now, they may not give us the waivers, but if they deny the waivers, the next logical question is, well, then what do you propose? And as far as I can tell, there's absolutely nothing on the table right now.
Well, you've said, and I've heard you speak about this, that this is not a partisan issue.
Absolutely not.
And you're a Democrat, but Democrats and Republicans both need to come to the table.
Yeah, one of the real problems with American politics today, and unfortunately I think it applies across the aisle, is that there are few people who are willing to risk an election or even, for an idea or a principle. So the purpose of legislative debate becomes the acquisition and retention of partisan political power rather than the exercise of that power in the interest of larger public good. Healthcare is the great leveler. Whether you're a Republican or Democrat, regardless of your political philosophy or what you do, we're all going to get old. We're all going to need the healthcare system. It affects all of us. And it's also going to be, it's becoming the major driver behind this huge national debt. I mean, it's a huge issue. I think the most pressing domestic issue that faces us today. When my generation retires, the unfunded entitlement of Medicare exceeds $65 trillion. Now, by comparison, Social Security is $5 trillion. And we're paying for that by selling securities to China and other countries that are willing to purchase them. I mean, what do you think is going to happen the day China says we're not going to underwrite U.S. deficit spending anymore? This is a huge issue. And we need to fix it. And you cannot fix it through partisan politics.
We're going to be talking in the second part of this program with Joe Trippi, who you've brought on board. He was the campaign manager for Howard Dean, to talk about this strategy and to bring it into communities. Do you see what you're doing in Oregon as the Oregon Health Plan was as potentially a model for the entire country?
Well, again, once you establish a set of principles, the system itself can probably look five or six different ways. If you look at the waivers we asked for in the Oregon Health Plan, the actual implementing legislation could have taken three or four different forms. Mm-hmm. So the model aspect of this is, first, we have to agree on what we want the healthcare system to produce. It's not about purchasing and delivering healthcare. It's about producing health. Healthcare is a means to an end. We need to get real clear on that. Secondly, you can't fix this system unless you go back and evaluate the fundamental assumptions and structures on which we've built this behemoth. I mean, right now it's like Bill Gates holding onto a 40-year-old operating system. If we're not willing to challenge those assumptions, we can't fix this. And third, it's not just about giving people access to the healthcare system. It's about looking inside that healthcare system at how we deliver that care and how we define a healthcare benefit. So if we can focus the debate on those two broad areas, we can fix this. And we can fix it in this country. And we can fix it by driving that change from the state level. Now, we'd love to have a couple other states doing exactly the same thing because we could become greater than the sum of our parts. But this is doable, and we're limited only by the scope of our vision and by the depth of our commitment, not as Republicans and as Democrats or as stakeholders, but as citizens, as a community.
So the software is going to be Health 2.0.
There you go, apparently, yeah. I'm a guy who sent his first email in 2001, so I'm a little beyond my expertise.
Have you got a reply yet? Governor, I can't let you go without talking. This is politically direct. I want to be directly political and ask, you chose not to enter the governorship race here in Oregon this year. Is there a political contest? I happen to see the calendar that there's a Senate seat occupied by one of the two senators you referred to, Republican Gordon Smith. Any interest at all in the United States Senate where you can take this discussion nationally?
Certainly not at this point. I mean, I think that there's a missing piece, and that is you have to figure out how to re-engage people and get people to recognize that just by changing the political leadership doesn't solve the problems unless the people themselves are willing to directly engage in the process of finding those solutions. And I think that the responsibility of citizenship doesn't start at the ballot box. It may end at the ballot box. That's where it really starts. And the Archimedes movement is trying to build that space for engagement. And at some point, if we're successful, you know, I certainly might consider reentering the political arena. But right now, I think I can do the most outside.
Well, it's extraordinary to hear someone who actually sounds as if they have the sequence of priorities right. And it's rare in politics. And, Governor, it's a pleasure having you on the program. Want to have you back in the future as this proceeds, particularly in 2007 when it might be subject for debate in the legislature. Thank you for joining us. Say the name of the website one more time.
JoinAM.org.
JoinAM.org. That's the Archimedes Movement. And our guest is Governor John Kitzhaber. Governor, again, thanks for being on Politically Direct.
Thank you.
It's Enid Live.
Gotta be Anderson, the only windows and doors to receive Green Seal certification for energy efficiency and environmentally friendly manufacturing. Now you too can have it all. For a limited time, get 7 Renewal by Anderson windows and 1 Anderson PermaShield patio door from Hall's Window Center for just $69.95. Left channel listeners save an extra $150. Go to hallswindowcenter.com. Click on the Green Seal for your coupon. Visit Hall's Window Center today on Business Park Drive in Sacramento and now in Roseville on Roseville Parkway next to BJ's. Call 1-800-76-HALLS. SMUD financing available. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends September 30th.
The Morning Retort with Scott and Sim.
To understand it.
Miss Romney.
What drives people?
Massachusetts governor. If he can't protect his own citizens from tunnels, how will he protect you from terrorists? Done. Campaign is dead.
See how easy it was? It was that easy.
See, that's the problem on the left. You're the problem right there. You got all. You think you get all the answers to all the little questions that does not drive a lot of people outside of California, outside of both coasts, outside of California and New York. Northeast. I mean, this is not the world. This is not the center of the universe, Mr. Sims.
If Romney gets the nomination, the tunnels win. Think about it. Taurus, Terra, Earth, tunnels. Do the math, Scott!
It's very erotic. I'm being turned on by all this talk.
Scott and Sims, mornings 5:30 to 9 on AM 1320, Sacramento's left channel.
Play perfectly. I just joined Cash Creek's Cash Club, and I received $100 in free bonus play.
Play profitably.
I just joined Cash Club and automatically got an instant shot at $1 million.
Play endlessly. Cash Creek has thousands of the newest, hottest slots, and bonus play just keeps the action going.
Play, bonusfully at Cash Creek, Northern California's only AAA four-diamond casino resort. Just join the Cash Club, and you can start out with up to $500 in free bonus play. It's like playing with their money. Well, not like it. You really are playing with their money. Plus, don't forget the instant shot at $1 million. And you can't play on an empty stomach, so they're giving away over 150 $25 dining comps every day. So you can play and dine on their dollar. Cash Creek Casino Resort. Well played. Visit by taking I-80 to 505 North and 16 West. For tickets, visit cashcreek.com or any Ticketmaster outlet.
No more cell phones in movie theaters. Please, you're not a cardiologist on call. You're a putz whose babysitter wants to know where the ketchup is. And then you tell her in the middle of the movie. Sometimes it's so loud in the theater I can barely hear what the black people are yelling at the screen. There is a simple solution. Put your cell phone on vibrate. And then up your... All right, new rule. No more celebrating gastric bypass. Carney Wilson, Al Roker, and now Star Jones are all being heralded by the media for stapling their stomachs shut. They shouldn't be. They're not making a brave choice to change. They're giving money to doctors to reroute their ability to turn food into crap.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
This is Politically Direct. He is David Bender. You are listening to Air America Radio.
And we're back. Joining us now on Politically Direct is Joe Trippi. Joe, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you, David.
Well, you know, we were talking in the first part of the program with your friend and the architect of the Archimedes movement, Governor John Kitzhaber. You know, I'm enormously impressed with listening to the governor's vision for this, but what I want to talk about with you is the actual execution of that vision. You've helped him to set up a website, to use some of the same tools that we used during the Howard Dean campaign. Talk about that. How do you see this playing out?
Well, I mean, first of all, Governor Kitzhaber deserves not more than my respect, but a lot of people's energy and time, because I think he's put a lot of thought into this and is really trying to wrestle with how do you create a movement that can actually change the healthcare system, and he's got a lot of ideas and vision. So the key is how do we get people involved, how do we get them engaged, and how do we get people to realize that they really do, if we all get together, we really do collectively have enough juice.
We have the power.
We have the power. I was trying to come up with a different way of saying that. But so,
sounds familiar.
Yeah, I'm really happy to be, you know, I've known Governor Kitzhaber for, you know, a number of years.
You were involved in his first campaign for governor, right?
Yeah, I did. I worked with him for his first campaign for governor and his reelection campaign. And frankly, he'll hate me for saying this, but frankly, was urging him to run for president. I just think he wants to change healthcare and not necessarily do it by spending a whole lot of time in Washington, D.C. But in any case, he really has this vision, and I really want to help use the skills and the tools that I know about that are out there, skills of people who can build a community with us and spread the word and get people to understand that if you go to archimedesmovement.org, You can become part of a national movement, a budding movement in the Northwest, in Oregon, but we intend to build a national movement to help really change and reform healthcare in this country and get to the day where every child has access and every American has access to health care.
Joe, what was interesting to me listening to the governor talk was that he was using some of the language that I heard you use during the Dean campaign, if I didn't hear Governor Dean use it, and it was about transformational energy, not just transactional energy in our politics. And what I think is extraordinary, as people are going to be going to this website, and there's now the shortened version of Archimedes Movement, it's joinam.org. As they go to this website, they're going to see something that is even bigger than the whole crisis of health and healthcare in this country. It's the whole crisis of our politics. And it seems that this is an opportunity for people to really address a political problem in a new way.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, what I was trying to get to, what so many of us were trying to get to in the Dean campaign was, you know, to get people to understand that our politics has become totally transactional, that, you know, it's, you know, which party's promising more tax cuts for your vote or more prescription drug benefits for your vote. And what we need, I mean, we're going to solve any of these problems, health care, energy, any of the problems that we have, is going to take transformational leadership where we challenge each other to sacrifice a bit for the common good and put aside division and pull together. And before we sort of embarked on this Archimedes movement, I was talking to Governor Kitzhoffer on the phone, and he was saying this to me. And I was like, oh, my gosh, there's finally somebody, a leader out there
who gets it.
And, you know, which is why I went to work immediately on him to, you know, to run for public office. And of course, because,
which could spoil it, by
the
way.
No, but because he does get it, he realizes that would spoil it. So,
yeah.
So except he did come up with the Archimedes movement, which is, you know, why people like you and I have to try to figure out how to get that shorter to join AM, which people can spell. I had a hard time getting to ArchimedesMovement.org, spelling Archimedes. You wouldn't have that problem. But
I didn't, actually.
Right, I know you didn't.
Let me talk to you, sure. Because this is what's really interesting to me is actually that not only does he get it, and he gets the transactional versus transformational part of that's the problem of our politics, but, you know, he talked specifically about how politicians need he was not looking at this as a Democrat trying to get an issue, a wedge issue for Democrats to take control of the Congress and to beat Republicans. He was talking about this as a nonpartisan, not just bipartisan, but as a nonpartisan issue, and that's truly transformational.
No. Again, I think that's why he understood, since he does get it, he understood that running for office immediately makes it partisan. And like you said, he understands that this has got to be a nonpartisan effort of a bunch of Americans coming together and making real change together, because the system, it doesn't work for anybody. I think we're growing pretty rapidly. And, you know, in the Dean campaign, we started with 432 people and got pretty big and I think affected a lot of change in politics. So I think this effort by Governor Kitzhoffer and so many others, we held a town hall meeting where, I mean, hundreds of people came.
Where was this show?
It was in Portland. But it was amazing, the outpouring of people who were committed to, again, you know, getting together. Kind of reminded me of the old meetups that we had been building in the Dean campaign. But these are people coming together around the issue of health care and having conversations about it. Not necessarily agreeing, but having a real conversation. The one thing they agreed on is that they would work together to come to a solution and get other people to join the movement. You know, I think Governor Kitzhoffer, the other thing he gets is it's not about him. I mean, that's the other thing that really is cool, is that he understands, you know, he can sort of help provide the platform and the vision, but in the end, it's only going to happen because enough Americans actually go there, join, and come together to do something about it. And so, you know, I'm going to do everything I can to help him to do that and, you know, get as many people I know to get involved and to hopefully, you know, get some of the tools built on the web and use some of the stuff that we learned in the Dean campaign to build something that's going to do something great, which is really change the healthcare system, and it's going to be from the bottom up. It's going to be the people that do it. It's just amazing to me that someone like Governor Kitzhoffer had the foresight and the energy. I mean, he's not getting anything out of this. I mean, he's just out there banging away. What he's getting out of it is this is what he wants to do. He really wants to change the healthcare system.
Yes. Joe Trippi, thank you for joining us on Politically Direct.
Thanks, David. Thanks for having me.
It's the Morning Retort with
something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Massive tubes. It really is the Internet consumer bill of rights. Because you got tangled up with all of these things that are going on the Internet commercially. The world has turned against this. If your own personal Internet, that is you and me. You and me is tubes. The Internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
It's a series of tubes.
Hey, listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? Want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
New rule. Prince Harry is going to hurt someone. Look at this kid. He's a thundering ball of rage. His mom's dead. His father dates rotted tree bark. His brother gets to be king, and he's destined to spend the rest of his life being photographed doing nothing. Arrest him before he kills a woman. New rule. Country music stars can't be authors. Charlie Daniels' new book, Ain't No Rag, Freedom, Family, and the Flag. It's a collection of musings by noted white trash icon Charlie Daniels on subjects ranging from American flags to American flag bumper stickers to what to do to a hippie if you catch him trying to burn your flag. Before this book, I was ambivalent on the issue of flag burning. Now I find myself reconsidering the question of book burning.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Just like jumbo shrimp, it only really makes sense when you taste it. Politically Direct with David Bender on Air America Radio.
We're back. Joining us now on Politically Direct is Yada Peng. She's the director of a group called Young People for the American Way. Yada, welcome to Politically Direct.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Explain the distinction and the genesis of Young People for the American Way. It's an offshoot of the organization. Now it's an independent entity, right?
We're actually still a part of People for the American Way, so we still benefit from all of the infrastructure of the 25-year history of our parent organization. And
but you've got your own website.
We have our own website.
And
that's right.
My point about independence. It's like, you know, you when you're old enough to get your car and leave home, you get your own website, and that's what an organization really declares its independence.
You're absolutely right. We do have our own website, youngpeople4.org, where you can learn all about the students in our program and the young people who are really doing revolutionary work on their campuses and in their communities.
Let's talk about that. What is the mission and what is the purpose? What are you doing now practically in organizing young people?
Well, Young People 4 fills what we saw as a real need, which is giving young progressives all over the country a place to really learn and cultivate leadership skills and give them an opportunity to put them into practice on campus and in their communities. And we're helping them to form a lifelong network of young leaders who are going to work together over the next several years.
So, practically speaking, what are some of the examples? I've heard some wonderful stories. I've heard that you've got some students down in Waco who are doing something. Tell me about that.
Well, all the fellows once selected come together for a national summit in January. And at the summit,
about 165
exactly in the class of 2006, 125 in the class of 2005, and we'll have 180 in the class of 2007. And
that's great.
When you come to the summit, you'll see students from all diverse backgrounds, students from HBCUs, community colleges, part of the Tribal College Network, and state university, as well as Ivy League students.
Right, and they're all mixed together.
And they're all mixed together.
Yeah, which is in and of itself a really growth-producing environment.
Right. You remember in high school when we used to all sit in the cafeteria tables and all...
clicks.
That's right.
Yeah. Not so much here. Yeah.
No, students are really learning from each other, learning how to, you know, impact positive social change on their campuses and in their communities, and learning strategies from one another. You use the example of Baylor University, which is a campus, a Christian campus in Waco, Texas, and one campus where we have some of the strongest organizing taking place around the country.
What are they doing?
Six fellows at Baylor University are working on a living wage campaign for their workers. And they were smart enough to realize that they needed to come up with a title that would really capture their students and their community. So they changed their title from the Social Justice Living Wage Campaign to 1 John 3. And they're really using their message.
1 John 3 being a verse from the Bible that speaks to...
That speaks to really reaching out to the poor and to making sure that we, like Jesus said, really reach out to those who are more marginalized.
It's so unusual to quote Jesus accurately and actually have people talking about what he was talking about as opposed to what they've interpreted.
You're absolutely
That's
right.
Fairly refreshing. And so they were working to help get better wages for workers there, and successfully so, right?
Right. Well, they're working on a four-year plan, but they've already sat down with the university president and with a lot of other coalition partners in the state to really help push this issue. And that's just one example of, you know, 75 examples that we have this year of
students
organizing.
Let's talk about some of them, because I think that helps illustrate the kind of work you're doing. There's something that I heard about that is really interesting to me in Florida, where some of the students are working on gay issues. Talk about that.
There are several campuses working on gay rights issues and marriage equality issues. And at University of Central Florida, there are students who, along with other fellows, held a rally on campus and really worked to get the president to change their discrimination policy to add sexual orientation to their non-discrimination policy on campus. And they actually got the president to change that policy at UCF, University of Central Florida.
That's terrific.
It is terrific. And their counterparts, you know, in Florida A&M University and HBCU in Tallahassee, Florida, those fellows there, led by Monique Gillum, who's the student body vice president of the school, she helped lead a student-wide effort. 3,000 students came to rally in Tallahassee. They had a 34-hour sit-in in the governor's office to help advocate on behalf of this 14-year-old boy. I don't know if you remember hearing about this. Martin Lee Anderson, who died in the Panama City boot
camp. I did
hear
about this, yes,
of course. You remember that, and they actually, through their efforts, were able to get the Florida Law Enforcement Commissioner Guy Tunnell to resign.
Really? Well, I come from a generation, and it's an older generation than yours and theirs. But I remember that campuses were often considered the place where the first line for real progressive organizing, and there's been a period, and maybe it started in the Reagan era, where people began to believe, and unfortunately accurately, that campuses were not about helping other people or causes larger than yourself. They were about self-promotion and what kind of job, what kind of car. And yet what you're finding is that the pendulum has now swung back in the other direction.
I think it gives us a lot of hope. It certainly does for me. I think that young people aren't apathetic. They're just disconnected from the political process. And this program really gives them the skills they need to regain that connection to political life and to their institutions that serve them.
Let's get very specific about this program. Where is it held in January?
January, over Martin Luther King Day weekend, yeah. It's always held at the National Education Association in Washington,
D.C. In Washington, D.C. So 100 plus, 125 the first year, 165 more next year. They're gathered from all around the country. What do they learn? What's the takeaway lesson for them as you're teaching?
They learn all kinds of skills. They learn networking skills. They learn coalition building skills, advocacy and lobbying. They learn media skills. So they'll do mock interviews like this with you. So they learn how to
They can
be
teach
prepared.
Me a few things. I'd like to learn from them.
But should actually come to the summit and teach them.
Quite seriously, though, what I find interesting about what you're doing, this is the playbook that the right wing has had in place for 25 years. I know you're close to Marcos Melitzis, who wrote a wonderful book, Crashing the Gate. Just in this, and for those who don't know, this is Marcos of Daily Kos. And in fact, one of the things that he talks about in that book is how the right wing has spent so much time and money developing its next generation of leaders. And we see the Ralph Reeds and the Grover Norquists, and they came out of college Republicans, and in fact, Karl Rove. And we have never done the same thing. And it's not for an absence of people. It's been an absence of will. And what you're doing is astounding, and it's planting seeds that are going to grow for a generation.
I think you're right. I think what we need to do is turn youth organizing and voter organizing from a phase in a young person's life to really the beginning of a lifelong commitment to the progressive movement. And to do that, we have to support them while they're sophomores and juniors and seniors on college campuses.
And not forget about them after.
That's right. And provide opportunities for them to access the nonprofit sector, the public sector, right. The social sectors. Make sure they have entry points into entry-level jobs and help them to move through the leadership pipelines that, for the most part on our side, don't exist. But like you said, the right wing spent just last year $43 million on college organizing and college leadership development alone. The past 4 years, $200 million on cultivating this next generation of conservative leaders. I say they've had their time. Now it's our turn.
Well, you know, it's funny. They need to spend money because truly they have fewer people. We have more people, but it's time that we started giving them that kind of support. Yada, tell me about you. What's your background? How were you brought to this movement? Because you have the skill set that seems to me to be self-taught. Where did this happen? How did you come to this place in your life?
I attribute the place where I am right now to two things. One is my family history. My grandfather and grandparents fled communist China, and they went to Brazil in search of freedom for themselves and for their children. And years later, my parents fled a military dictatorship in Brazil. And they came to the United States so that my sister and I would have a better chance in life. And I really attribute my passion and my commitment to democracy and to our progressive values and our nation's core values to that history.
And you knew your grandparents. So
yes, I did.
You heard those stories. And you were a young girl in Brazil?
I was actually born here in the United States. My parents came in 1974, and I was born in 1976 in Atlanta, Georgia. And carry that family history with me and feel a strong sense of allegiance to all the work that the generations before me have done to give me this opportunity to grow up in what should be a great, great democracy. And then I spent a lot of time working in the nonprofit sector and found a lot of people with great vision and great passion, but not a lot of management skills. So I actually worked in the nonprofit sector, worked in consulting, and then went back to get my master's in nonprofit management so that I could build this program of my dreams in a way that would have a long life.
So you really actually created your dream job, which is a wonderful thing. And I have to say, what is most heartening to me, because I come out of the same kind of organizing background, is seeing that you're putting in a place, a structure that's going to survive you. That, you know, we had some great youth organizations when I was involved. We had Americans for Democratic Action back in the day. Still there, but not very successful in organizing now among young people. And frankly, people who remember Franklin Roosevelt and Eleanor Roosevelt are fewer and farther away from current generations, and you can't relate traditional progressive values in the same way. You need new role models. You need people who can speak to that. Who are some of the people that you're looking to help lead this? Some of the people who can come out of this program. Have you met any of the leaders tomorrow in what you're doing?
I have. In the Young People Forum, we have several different leadership bodies that we can help begin to cultivate those leadership skills that they're going to need when they serve on boards of directors of nonprofit organizations. So we talked about Jenny Parker at Baylor University. We talked about Monique Gillum at FAMU. And we talked about the work Mallory Wells was doing. We didn't attribute that to her at University of Central Florida. And people like Heather Sturgill at University of Cincinnati. There are so many young leaders, young progressives who are innovative, who are entrepreneurial, really are social and political entrepreneurs of tomorrow. And they are the ones that we need to look to who will be
our
next generation leaders.
And you're trying to get these people to think in terms of potentially running for office.
We want them to think about running for office. We want them to think about working in the nonprofit sector. And even if they want to work in the private sector, then to have a social consciousness around that, to have a commitment to social justice. So we're looking at for partners and, you know, for corporate social responsibility and really helping to make sure that young people, wherever they are, whatever their passions are, that we are supporting them over the course of their lives as young progressives. And we actually started a network called the Young Elected Officials Network. I was surprised to find that there is no network for young progressive leaders who currently serve in local and state positions of leadership around this country.
What's the cutoff? It's under 30?
Under 35.
Under 35.
And my colleague, who was deputy director of Young People Forum, Andrew Gillum, who's the city commissioner in Tallahassee, Florida, he's 27, ran and won when he was 23. And there's a network of Andrews, of 290 of them, all across the country, serving in school board, city commission, county commission.
You've got 290 people
signed
up now.
That's right, state representatives.
That's terrific.
It's absolutely amazing. Like Alicia Thomas Morgan, who's a state representative in Georgia, young woman, 26, who, like Andrew, won in a over 70% Caucasian district. And they're young African-American leaders who are going to be continuing, we hope, in elected office.
How about you? Any thought ever of running for office?
You know, I've been asked that several times. My way of working is where there's a need, if I can fill it, I will fill it. So to me right now, the greatest need is in this area of really empowering and encouraging and nurturing this next generation of progressive leaders. I feel like I can maximize my commitment to this country by empowering a whole cohort, a whole generation of young people who are not just passionate, but who have the skills to be able to implement change today and tomorrow.
Well, congratulations on the work that you're doing. We
a post once held by Sir Isaac Newton. Hawking such an a-hole.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
You're listening to AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel. Left Channel. Streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Fresh concern about execution by lethal injection has prompted drastic action in Florida. CBS News correspondent Kelly Cobier reports.
Florida Governor Jeb Bush has put all executions on hold after a medical examiner said it took too long for a convicted killer to die earlier this week. The execution of Angel Nieves Diaz lasted 34 minutes, twice as long as usual. An autopsy showed the needles used for lethal injection missed his veins and went into the flesh in his arms instead.
And a federal judge has ordered the state of California to fix its protocol for lethal injection, saying the current method violates the Constitution's ban on cruel and unusual punishment. CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen has been following this controversy.
These are not out-of-the-blue actions by the federal judge in California or the Florida governor. In California, there were extensive hearings a few months ago that convinced this judge that the law requires more right now than the medical community and prison officials have been willing to offer, and that's essentially what Jeb Bush is saying, too.
A changing of the guard at the Pentagon, with Robert Gates set to become defense secretary on Monday, they held a farewell ceremony for Donald Rumsfeld, who took the occasion to praise the troops.
It has been the highest honor of my life to serve with them, these makers of history.
President Bush and Vice President Cheney were there to heap praise on Rumsfeld. Mr. Bush said the nation is better off for his service. CBS News has learned that 3,500 additional troops will be soon positioned in Kuwait, ready to go if President Bush orders a buildup in Iraq. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez says he spoke with Fidel Castro by phone today, and while the Cuban leader does not have cancer, Chavez says what happened to his health is very serious, and Castro is fighting a great battle. Director of National Security John Negroponte told the Washington Post that Castro is dying and probably won't last more than a few months. A terrible storm slammed into the Pacific Northwest today, and Don O'Neill of station KIRO reports it promises to be a nasty night.
Tonight it'll be down in the mid-30s. Snow showers and rain is projected. We've already had four deaths in this horrible storm. One young lady died in a place called Capitol Hill right here in Seattle where she drowned in her basement. Another young man died in his bed when a tree collapsed through his bedroom wall and the bedroom window.
About 1.5 million homes and businesses lost power, and utility officials say repairs could take days. Apparently it's an isolated incident, but more than 300 people say they got sick, and at least three were hospitalized after eating at an Olive Garden restaurant in Indianapolis. Steve Coe is a spokesman for the chain.
What we've heard from the health department, the major focus of theirs is looking at the possibility of an employee working at the restaurant with flu-like symptoms.
Authorities say six Olive Garden workers reported they felt sick on Monday. The Dow up 28 points to a new record, 12,445. This is CBS News.
This holiday season, give the most eternal, unique gift of the year. Name a star after someone. I'm Rocky Moselle with International Star Registry. For $54 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com, we will name a star after anyone on your gift list. The new star name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office, and we will send you an incredible personalized gift package. Call the Star Registry, 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com for the gift that shines forever.
Somewhere between what a person is saying and what they're not saying, between what a person wants and what they need, lies understanding. For every client, everywhere, UBS has the distinct ability to listen. But more importantly, the commitment to understand. UBS, leader in wealth management, global asset management, and investment banking, and committed to a relationship we call you and us. Member SIPC.
An Indiana woman has shamed the Pentagon into providing flame-resistant clothing for the troops in Iraq. CBS News correspondent Steve Kathan has her story.
Knowing her great-nephew and other soldiers wanted the flame-resistant uniforms, 68-year-old Margot Huey of Columbus, Indiana, went to work.
If you go through the Department of Defense or the Army, it takes quite a while to get anything accomplished.
So she held fundraisers all over town.
He had requested the gloves and the hood.
And that's about all she could afford. Now the military should be able to get full flame-resistant uniforms to all soldiers early next year. And Margot's great-nephew?
He is going to treat me to a dinner the next time he gets home.
Steve Kathan, CBS News.
Robert Clark of Painesville, Ohio, has been sentenced to at least 30 days in jail for fatally shooting his Great Dane. But the judge offered to knock 10 days off the sentence if he puts on a safety pup costume for animal safety programs in schools. Clark's thinking about it. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
New rule, one dear to my heart. Lap dancing is a First Amendment right. The L.A. City Council this week banned lap dancing. What is next? Burning books? Lap dancers, or Imagineers, as I like to call them, are artists drawing you into their fantasy world, much like a skilled novelist does. If novelists had perfectly waxed bikini lines. But more importantly, lap dancers are expressing an idea called hope. The hope that someday a skinny young woman with artificial breasts and a navel piercing will want to have sex with you. And without that hope, millions of American men might just as well throw themselves into the sea.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
Sunny day with tonight's AccuTerra forecast.
And folks, wasn't it just a perfect day for a terror alert? Bone chilling in the morning, clear and present danger in the afternoon, tapering off into cold sweats at night. Tomorrow, AccuTerra is predicting 100% chance of a really big terror alert to take our mind off bad economic news. Now, Al-Qaeda cell coming down from Canada into here, the Great Lakes regions, the folks in the Detroit and Saginaw. You might want to put on that extra layer of Kevlar. Our exclusive AccuTerra radar is picking up a lot of chatter out here in the Denver area, so stay away from chemical plants, nuclear facilities, and of course, the French fries at Arby's. Here in the West, some light showers of ammonium nitrate, a little sarin gas are possible in the Los Angeles area, but don't expect loss of life. The Santa Anas are going to push all that nasty gunk out. Here's your 5-day. Yellow, bluish yellow, yellow again, yellow gradually becoming orange, and orange back into yellow. And we've got an orangish red weekend on tap, so be sure to have plenty of bottled water and canned goods on hand. And that's fair. All right, make it a great day.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
time for EcoTalk with host Betsy Rosenberg.
She'll be great. She's a very smart, capable person who knows exactly what took place and will lay out the facts. And that's what the American people want to see.
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich.
And welcome to EcoTalk, where we are, yes, thank you, George, laying out the eco facts we think you want to know about, need to know about, should know about. Well, you may have assumed that projects in our national forests, such as logging and road paving, were subject to some environmental review. Or maybe after 6 years of the Bush administration, you stopped expecting such logical notions. In a moment, we'll be speaking with Tim Presso, a lawyer for Earth Justice, their motto, because the Earth needs a good lawyer, about the latest crimes against nature. Then Daniel Heinerfeld of our other partner, NRDC, will take us back to the Alternative Car Expo, where he chatted with Ed Begley Jr., the actor and activist. In our second half, we'll feature a chat with Eben Goodstein. If that name sounds familiar, I've mentioned it a few times. He is the Oregon professor who is on a two-year sabbatical to get college campuses organized around climate change, an event coming up in just a little over a year called Focus the Nation. And last but not least, Gay Brown will be here to introduce us to her new line of books called Greenopia, incredibly useful green guides for American cities. Want to welcome our first guest, Tim Presso. Thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here.
You are a staff attorney in the Bozeman office for Earth Justice, and you are watching what's going on in our forests, and there was an announcement this week that some folks may have missed. Tell us the significance of it.
Well, this was an announcement that deals with the process of creating management plans for our national forest system, 190 million acres of lands that we all own together as public lands. And for 25 years, when the U.S. Forest Service put together a management plan for the national forest, one of the requirements was they would also put together an environmental impact statement that would disclose what the management plan would mean in terms of environmental impacts and present a range of alternative management approaches that would offer different balancing of various values in managing the forest. The Bush administration just announced this week that they are going to discard the practice of doing an environmental impact statement in connection with the forest plans, and really it's the removal of the public from the public lands, because the environmental impact statement process required under the National Environmental Policy Act is one of the chief ways that the public was able to plug into national forest management.
And in the story I have here, it says, based on a U.S. Supreme Court ruling and a new approach to forest planning, you just described that new approach. What's the Supreme Court ruling?
Well, the Supreme Court in a couple of cases has suggested that land management plans could not be challenged directly until they were actually implemented on the ground. But the Bush administration has taken that ruling and sort of twisted it around to say that land management plans, because they require later implementation steps, don't mean anything, therefore there's no environmental impact. But what we know is that those plans essentially zone the forest for various uses, so that some areas will be zoned for logging, others will be zoned for wildlife, others will be zoned for backcountry recreation. And those decisions are made at the planning stage, and they're not revisited down the road when projects are carried out. And so those plans do make a big difference. It's like telling you that when the city zones your neighborhood for certain uses, that doesn't have any impact on what you can do with your property. But we all know that's not true.
And what do you think the agenda of the White House might be?
Well, what we've seen over and over again is that this White House is very hostile to the process of environmental review and disclosure. Unfortunately, this is just the latest in a series. What the administration has focused on has been, for the past 5 years, eliminating environmental review for project-level decisions. Now they have eliminated environmental review for the big-picture planning decisions. And the result is that both at the front-end big-picture planning and at the downstream project implementation, we don't undertake environmental review, and the only unifying theme is environmental review is being set on the sidelines.
So you obviously disagree with the folks with the American Forest Resource Council who say that these NEPA analyses are a waste of time and money, that they don't do any good either way.
Well, I think that you know, there's plenty of evidence to show that's not the case. We've seen many circumstances in which when the agency presented the public with a range of alternative approaches, the public will rally around certain aspects of various alternatives that maybe the agency wasn't considering or really seriously looking at in the first instance. And so it's an opportunity for the democratic process to work in managing our public lands. And I think this is a move toward establishing the tyranny of the Forest Service bureaucrat over the wishes of the public.
In fact, I'll read a quote from Fred Norbury, Associate Deputy Chief for the National Forest System. He says, "Our thinking was if a plan doesn't cause anything to happen and it doesn't prohibit anything from happening, it really doesn't have any environmental effects." Well, is it that they're not reading the reports, or why would it absolutely have no effect?
Well, this is just another way of them saying that the plan is an abstract document until it's implemented with some project decisions down the road. But the fallacy in that is obvious, which is what's the point of the plan if it's not directing something? And, in fact, they do direct things through this zoning process I've talked about. And so when logging projects go forward, it's only because there's been a plan that says that this area is appropriate for logging. And it's that decision, that broad-scale zoning decision, they're now trying to insulate from environmental review, and we don't think that's right.
We had you on Eco Talk a few months back to celebrate the reinstatement of the Clinton-era roadless rule. Could this new review process affect how roadful our forests are?
Well, certainly the decision about where roads can be built for various purposes such as logging and oil and gas development are among the things that are considered at the planning level. And I can assure that anybody who's dealing with the National Forest System, if down the road you oppose a road building project, what you're going to hear back from the Forest Service is, oh, this was all decided in our forest plan. And now they're telling us the forest plan doesn't mean anything. They've been talking out of both sides of their mouths on these issues. And it's really a shell game where no matter which level you try to focus on to address the Forest Service's projects, the action they claim is happening at the other end.
Now, to whatever extent the White House could count on a rubber stamp from Congress in the past, with this new greener tinted Congress coming in January, do you have hope that some of these things will stop and perhaps be reversed?
Certainly, I'm hopeful that we'll have more oversight and more accountability. I think, though, that really this is going to be, again, a matter of the public opposition having to carry the day. And so, for example, the administration's new forest planning rules, which sort of set the guidelines for forest planning that they announced about a year ago at this time, are being challenged in court. And I have I think it's quite certain that this new elimination of environmental review will be challenged in court. And I think the lesson we can learn from that is how valuable it is that we as citizens can go into our federal court system and haul the government in there to make it accountable for its actions.
But first we have to keep everybody informed, and that's what you at Earth Justice and our other partners and other environmental organizations are doing. It's kind of too bad that we need this checks and balances on our own government to protect our environment. I mean, that sounds like obvious after 6 years of plundering, but, you know, think about it. Just it's really coming from groups like yours. And why is information so important? What can listeners who are hearing this do about it?
Well, I think they need to make their voices heard. They need to make their voices heard to their elected representatives. They need to make their voices heard to the Bush administration. Unfortunately, this administration has been very clever about operating at a highly deep level of detailed regulatory measures, the kinds of things that the public isn't really focused on at the broad level. And the devil is in the details. And this administration has been well aware of that, and they've had industry lobbyists take over a lot of these agencies who know these detailed regulations inside and out and understand where the pressure points are. And but when something like this does bubble to the surface, I think the public needs to make sure that their elected representatives know they're not happy.
Okay, Tim, we have about 2 minutes left. Anything else we should be aware of that's coming up, keep an eye on, look out for, be warned about?
Well, I think there are any number of possibilities with the administration now facing a situation where there's no longer a compliant Congress to effectuate its policies. At this juncture, I would very much expect the administration is going to try to effectuate as much of mischief as it can through executive branch rulemakings and the kinds of things that it can do without congressional involvement. One of the things we're keeping a very close eye on is that although we've been recently successful in court in reinstating protections for National Forest roadless areas, those pristine, unprotected areas of our national forest system that the Bush administration has sought to lift from protection. The Bush administration is now entertaining petitions from various states to alter the management of those roadless areas, and we've just seen a report this week that the state of Utah, for example, is considering a petition to eliminate any protection for the roadless areas on national forest lands within its borders, and we're going to be very closely watching how the administration deals with those kinds of things.
Do you expect any last-minute action as the year winds down from the executive branch?
Well, I think we're seeing it. The measure we're talking about today, the elimination of environmental review, is one of those things that slips into the Federal Register during the busy holiday period when people are rightfully concerned about getting together with family and doing their Christmas shopping and all those kinds of things. And it's no accident that it gets announced at this time of year when people's attention tends to be diverted. And, you know, this is the kind of thing that we constantly have to be vigilant for.
Maybe they're smarter than we think they are in a dark, sinister sort of way. Thanks so much, Tim Presso.
Thank you.
Lawyer for Earth Justice in the Bozeman office, keeping tabs on what is going on with the Bush administration and your forests. Stay with us. We'll be back right after these messages.
It's Enid Live, weekday afternoon.
Jewish people have to start. The Jewish population in America dropped 5% in the last decade, which may explain why this country's finances have gone to. Breed, you sons of Abraham, breed! We need you. Israel needs you. Kobe Bryant, Robert Blake, and Phil Spector need you. Without Jews, who's going to write all those sitcoms about blacks and Hispanics? New rule. Living in a box for 6 weeks doesn't make you a magician, it makes you homeless.
Laughing at the Truth. AM 1320.
I wanted it all. Intelligence, great looks, physical strength, inner beauty, even social consciousness. Friends said that I wanted too much, but I wouldn't settle. And now, I have it all.
This woman is talking about her Renewal by Anderson replacement windows from Hall's Window Center. If it looks better, lasts longer, and outperforms the competition, it's gotta be Anderson. The only windows and doors to receive Green Seal certification for energy efficiency and environmentally friendly manufacturing. Now you too can have it all. For a limited time, get 7 Renewal by Anderson windows and 1 Anderson PermaShield patio door from Hall's Window Center for just $69.95. Left channel listeners save an extra $150. Go to HallsWindowCenter.com. Click on the green seal for your coupon. Visit Hall's Window Center today on Business Park Drive in Sacramento and now in Roseville on Roseville Parkway next to BJ's. Call 1-800-76-HALLS. SMUD financing available. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends September 30th.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cash Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cash Fever Jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cash Fever Jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at CashCreek.com. So join Cash Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
Welcome back to EcoTalk, where we green the red and blue states one program at a time, or so we hope. We hope you're enjoying our programs, our segments, our interviews. We are aimed to bring you the voices of visionaries who are making a difference in their everyday lives, in their work, in their visions, in their hopes for a greener tomorrow. And one of the big hopes that we have is that the transportation sector is going to be greening up pretty quickly here, specifically our vehicles. There is new technology not only on the horizon, but right there on the shelf. And some of that is being taken down and implemented mostly by smaller independent car companies. Earlier this week, we heard about the Alternative Car Expo that was taking place in Santa Monica from one of its organizers, Rick Sykes. Today, as part of our continuing partnership with the Natural Resources Defense Council, we have a report on the expo from NRDC's Daniel Heinerfeld. On Saturday, he carpooled to the show to kick some tires and talk to some of the folks who are inventing our transportation future.
The vehicles at the expo ranged from the sublime to the ridiculous. The Honda fuel cell car, with a price tag of $1.4 million, could probably fit into either category. On the other hand, what's $1.4 million when all your tailpipe emits is water vapor? Inside the vast hangar at Santa Monica Airport, I ran into one of the great champions of alternative transportation, Ed Begley, Jr.
My principal car is an electric. It's right outside. It's a RAV4 Toyota electric car. My wife's car is a Prius, so when I need to go beyond the range of the electric, honey, give me your key. Here's mine. Take the electric today. I need your Prius. I need to go to Vancouver. So we happen to be a two-car family, and in so doing, I have full mobility like anyone. And if you're not a two-car family, I understand that. That's better. But then a few times a year when you need to go beyond the range of the electric, you can rent a Prius nowadays or rent another fuel-efficient car for the 3-4 days a year you need to go beyond 80 miles.
Standing there amidst the plug-in hybrids and natural gas cars, the biodiesels and electric scooters, I realized there was something conspicuously missing. The famous all-electric Tesla Roadster. Apparently, it was across town at the L.A. Auto Show. But I asked Ed Begley what he thought of it.
The Tesla is a very exciting car. It's a rocket. It's a sports car, a very expensive car. But, you know, besides that car, there's many cars available. You can buy a Gem for $8,000, a little neighborhood electric vehicle. If you don't need to go on the freeway, if you need to just go to and from the market, to and from the bank and errands and work, and most people could get by with that kind of car. $8,000, that's a good car.
Between those pokey neighborhood electric vehicles and the $100,000 Tesla Roadster, the market is wide open. One of the vehicles trying to occupy that space is the three-wheel NMG, which stands for No More Gas. It was definitely the wackiest-looking car at the show.
Well, this is a one-person commuter vehicle. If you go to the kiddie land at Disneyland, you look at the helicopter, this is what it looks like without the rotor on top. But what it does, it drives you down the highway at 75 miles an hour in the diamond lanes. It's America's lowest cost, all-electric, freeway legal vehicle you can drive home today. It's not a concept vehicle. It's not a promise to build something in the future. The one outside you can take home for your vehicle at the end of the show.
All right, I'm getting into this crazy-looking contraption here. Oh, I feel like I'm in a very snug little pod here.
Personal transportation has power windows, tilt steering, heater, AM/FM CD player.
What does it retail for?
It retails for $24,900. The flip side of that, about $24.90 of electricity, you can drive 1,000 miles.
In addition to cars, there were some interesting accessories at the expo. One device, a bit larger than a bread box and equipped with a hose, enables you to fuel a natural gas vehicle at home through your existing gas line and meter.
You come home, you kiss the wife, you say hi to the kids, you plug in your car. If you're dead empty, it'll take 6 to 8 hours, get a range from 260 miles. If you're smart, you'll come home after your day at work and just plug it in. It'll take an hour. It's the equivalency of running a gas dryer. It couldn't be any safer.
It couldn't be any more convenient either. Suddenly, the idea of fueling a car at home, either with natural gas or electricity, became very appealing. Well, from the sublime to the ridiculous, there were two guys wandering around the expo with large, colorful contraptions strapped to their backs. The so-called thrust pack is basically a lawnmower engine with a big enclosed propeller.
Gets me up hills that I never would be able to without just pedaling, so.
Now, why do this instead of have, let's say, you know, an electric bike or an electric skateboard or something?
Well, that's because we're powering the person. This enables us to get on whatever we get on. It's powering us. So we get on, we hop on the scooter, we go down to the lake, we hop in the canoe, we go across the lake, hop on the skateboard, ice skates, you name it. It's powering the person.
It looks like some kind of crazy jetpack.
It's not quite a jetpack, but we are using thrust from a propeller. But we stay on the ground. We're not leaving the ground.
They might not be leaving the ground, but after they sparked up their loud gas engine, several people wished they'd leave the premises. Outside the hangar, I met Bob Tarlow, an early adopter of the Toyota Prius who'd brought his son to the expo. Bob summed up the event pretty well.
In some way or the other, the dependence on foreign oil has got to either end or cut down considerably. And the technologies that are at this show here point the way to the future. They may not be the future 100%, but they're pointing us in the right direction.
For EcoTalk and the Natural Resources Defense Council, this is Daniel Heinerfeld in Los Angeles.
Thanks, Daniel, for that encouraging news. And now for some bad news. Hate to spoil that wonderful fire you may be having now or planning to have over the holidays. Burning wood, as you may know, is a major contributor to air pollution. Smoke from campfires, our fireplaces, and wood stoves contain hundreds of toxic chemicals such as carbon monoxide. To reduce smoke when you burn wood, use only clean and dry wood and never burn particle board or treated, stained, or painted wood. They release very toxic chemicals when burned. Also want to warn you against throwing wrapping paper into the fireplace after you've opened up those Christmas or Hanukkah presents, especially if it has any metal in it. But none of that stuff is good for you, the chemicals in that wrapping paper. So avoid all that. And this tip is from our friends at Nerdy Books, just the facts man on the environment. Stay with us. We'll be back right after the news break.
It's the Morning Retort with...
Now, new companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
About gas prices. It's good that it costs a lot, and not just because the sales tax will help pay for our twice-a-year governor elections. It's also good if it makes you think of walking the three blocks from your house to Del Taco instead of taking the Land Cruiser. Gasoline costs a lot because we have to find it, bribe or kill the people who live on top of it, extract it, refine it, ship it, and pump it. You'll pay $2 a gallon and you'll like it because you know what the alternative is, riding on the bus with poor people. New rule, call things what they are. If your morning coffee contains crushed ice, whipped cream, and caramel, it's a milkshake.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
I wanted it all. Intelligence, great looks, physical strength, inner beauty, even social consciousness. Friends said that I wanted too much, but I wouldn't settle. And now, I have it all.
This woman is talking about her Renewal by Anderson replacement windows from Hall's Window Center. If it looks better, lasts longer, and outperforms the competition, it's gotta be Anderson. The only windows and doors to receive Green Seal certification for energy efficiency and environmentally friendly manufacturing. Now you too can have it all. For a limited time, get 7 Renewal by Anderson windows and 1 Anderson PermaShield patio door from Hall's Window Center for just $69.95. Left channel listeners save an extra $150. Go to HallsWindowCenter.com. Click on the green seal for your coupon. Visit Halls Window Center today on Business Park Drive in Sacramento and now in Roseville on Roseville Parkway next to BJ's. Call 1-800-76-HALLS. SMUD financing available. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends September 30th.
At long last, we're bringing you an interview I did a few months ago at the ASHE conference in Phoenix. That stands for Association for the Advancement of Sustainability in Higher Education. Professor Eben Goodstein was the keynote speaker at that gathering of college students and administrators. He is so concerned about climate change that he's taken a 2-year sabbatical from teaching economics at Lewis and Clark College in Portland to focus the nation.
I started being aware of global warming in the late 80s, early 90s, like most academics, I guess. And when I first wrote the edition of my first textbook, I actually included a chapter on global warming up front because I knew it was going to be the big issue. But it didn't develop as most normal environmental problems develop. I mean, it seemed to be in the 90s, awareness was growing. We signed the Kyoto Treaty, and I thought something was going to happen.
We didn't sign the Kyoto Treaty.
Well, we did actually sign the treaty. We just haven't ratified it. So we signed the treated in 97, but then progress just ground to a halt. Nothing was happening. So in 1999, I started a nonprofit organization called the Greenhouse Network, which has done, for the last 6 years, what Al Gore has actually started to do now. We've held a series of weekend training workshops, about 16 of those around the country, training folks from communities who are worried about global warming, how to talk about it and how to message about it. And so we put about 600 people through those trainings over the years. The movement, I think, that is really growing right now has been sort of gestating for a long time, and now I think it's really hit general awareness in a deep way. But that awareness is still quite diffuse. Certainly no one's voting on this issue as the primary concern. And then the recent science, especially about the continental ice sheets, I think has really put a new urgency into this. Certainly for me, there's a real fear that we may very soon cross some emissions threshold that will lock in a temperature increase that would lead to the irreversible collapse of the West Antarctic and Greenland ice sheets. Now, if that was to happen, then that would raise global sea levels on the order of 35 to 40 feet, which would inundate all of the coastal cities of the world. So we're talking about the possibility of sea level rise on the order of 10 feet a century if we do initiate this kind of a collapse. And that would be very difficult for my kids to manage. So it's very urgent, really, in the sense that we have to act this decade to short-circuit that kind of an outcome.
So that requires focus.
It does. And the idea behind Focus the Nation is, I mean, if we want to keep global warming at the low end, then the U.S. government at the national level needs to do two things in the next decade. One is it needs to stabilize global warming pollutants. And the second is we need a program of investment on the scale of tens of billions of dollars a year in the clean energy technology solutions that we'll need in 2030, 2040, when we really have to make steep cuts in emissions, so we can rewire the planet with clean energy, create millions of jobs, and really lay the foundation for a stable climate and a rich and prosperous future. But it needs focus. Focus the Nation, January 31st, 2008. We will be coordinating teams of over 1,000 colleges, universities, high schools, middle schools, elementary schools actually are signing up to have a one-day simultaneous educational symposia and forums on this topic of global warming solutions for America.
As you travel, you know, outside green circles, do you hear people talking about this?
Yeah, well, two quick stories. One, I was in Wisconsin last summer. It was very hot. First 6 months of this year were the hottest on record, so it looks to be yet another record-breaking year. Three teenagers in a pool. One of them looks, turns to the other one and says, do you think this is global warming? And the other one says, nah, our government says it's not happening. And the third one says, well, I don't care what the government says. I think it is happening. Now, the problem, of course, is that conversation stopped there because those kids didn't know what to say next. And this is the real challenge with global warming is at the individual level, it seems so hopeless. What are you going to do? And that's why Focus the Nation, to me, is exciting and inspiring because I've been talking about global warming for a long time, and I my urgency and sense of concern, I think, was communicated well, but I never really knew what to tell people to do. You know, write your senator. But
get a hybrid car.
Yeah, I mean, buy a car. Focus the Nation is going to bring together millions of Americans for a focused discussion about solutions, and I think really can help change the national conversation from one of sort of fatalism. I mean, how can we possibly do something this? To instead to sort of kick in the good old American can-do spirit. I mean, that's what Americans are really good at, is solving problems.
Innovation.
We have the markets, we've got the engineers, we've got the scientists. We put our mind to this problem. There really are no technical or economic obstacles. We can do this.
But there's something in the human mind that's really good at denial. Are we penetrating that mass denial over something that really is pretty darn scary? I mean, in my lifetime, I never thought I would be looking at my child's future with sadness because I wonder, will she be able to have the four children she wants because she's an only child? And your children, you say, have been a big inspiration for you. Shouldn't every parent be part of this movement?
I mean, 20 years ago, global warming was to me, and I think most Americans at most, as some sort of science fiction story. And in fact, the urgency and immediacy of this, I think, is really, really just beginning to hit home.
How do you get people to not go, as Al Gore says, but I've been saying it for a long time, too, to not just go from denial to despair, but to go into action?
Yeah, I think the D that's missing there is determination. Focus the Nation really is going to provide that energy, I think. As I travel around the country, what I find is people are so excited about this because they don't know what to do, but this tells them what to do. What should they do? They should get their school to sign up to participate in Focus the Nation. They should tell their rabbi or their pastor, the preacher about Focus the Nation and get their church or their synagogue or their mosque or their temple involved. Every event across the country will culminate with a roundtable with politicians. So we're going to be asking young people to invite their political leaders, state, regional, federal, especially federal, to come to their campuses and talk with them about, and bipartisan, absolutely bipartisan. I mean, candidates, elected officials from all parties. Let's just have a conversation about our future and tell us what you're going to do or not going to do for us in the next decade.
You called this a civilizational challenge.
Absolutely. I mean, this is not an environmental issue. This is the everything issue. You know, I've been learning about global warming now for, you know, 15 or 20 years, and every morning when I wake up, there's some news that's saying this is more urgent than we thought. It's more serious than we thought. If you go down the mountain chain of the Western Americas to a place like Lima, Peru, that's a city that's 6 million people dependent on the Rimac River for their water supply. That river could dry up 6 months of the year in a couple of decades because the snows and the glaciers in the Andes are disappearing so rapidly. So this is a human rights issue. It's a health issue. It's an everything issue.
Do you sense that urgency out there in the real world outside of the academic environmental circles?
Yeah. Again, I'll tell you another story. My car broke down this summer again, and it was very hot, record-breaking heat. Tow truck driver, we're driving along. You know, I'm in the cab with him, and he says, "God, it's global warming, man. It's just hot. I'm out here working in this stuff." And so, you know, I didn't bring it up. He did.
But as you said, it's not going to be just warming. that's kind of a misnomer, yeah. too. I mean, how is it that global warming will lead to an ice age?
Well, you know, Jamie Lovelock, a scientist, says that we need to stop calling this global warming and start calling it global heating. And, in fact, I'm finishing a book called Fighting for Love in the Century of Extinction, How Passion and Politics Can Change the Future. It'll be out next summer from New England University Press. And the other day, I just went through and did a global search and replace, and I took out every place that said global warming and put in global heating.
I love it. But James Lovelock, who was just on my show a few weeks ago with Helen Caldicott, while she says he's right on about global warming and the threat, he's dead wrong about nuclear power being the answer. Yeah. So do you have any opinion on that?
Well, you know, Focus the Nation is a nationwide event, and we are absolutely not going to prescribe the discussion at any campus. And I'm sure at a lot of campuses, nuclear is going to be a hot topic for discussion. Coal sequestering, clean coal, these kind of issues are going to be important. So we want to have a wide open discussion and a wide open debate about these technology solutions. So, you know, going forwards, my own view on this is that nuclear is a highly subsidized technology. It has the waste disposal problems. It's certainly subject to requires sort of massive government regulation because of the waste issues and also because of the terrorist threats. If we're going to spend all that money on a technology, then I think there's a lot better options out there. And as an economist, I'm really optimistic that we can solve this problem, because if we can spend tens of billions of dollars a year on developing these clean energy technologies, then we will drive their costs down. So that when my daughter's child is in college and they really are facing a desperate situation, I mean, they're seeing the planet heat up 2 degrees Fahrenheit a decade, or one or 2 degrees Fahrenheit, and they really need to cut emissions of global warming pollutants on the order of 10% to 15% per decade, they are really going to need the tools that we can give them now. They're going to need the fuel cells and the solar arrays and the biofuels technologies. And if we don't begin investing tens of billions of dollars this decade, and this is what Jim Hansen is really talking about, those tools will not be available, and they will have no way out.
It's not like the world will end overnight or we'll all drop dead one day. It's really more a decline that I think we're already seeing in terms of higher acidity in the oceans and what that's doing to coral reefs, not to mention, you know, mercury in our fish. And can we drink tap water the way we did as children without worrying about it? Can we jump in the lake or the beach and not worry about what's in the water? I mean, those are losses we've already suffered. And as each generation loses a memory or has less of a memory of what nature really is, they say you have to love something before you can save it.
Yeah, and I am optimistic largely because I have been traveling around the country talking to people about Focus the Nation, and but more even beyond campuses, businesses, I think, that are playing an important role. I think that the decisions that we make over the next decade to stabilize global warming pollution or not, those are going to have profound impacts, not only on our own lives and the lives of our children, but indeed for every human being who will ever walk the face of the planet from now until the end of time. You know, what an incredible time to be alive. Really, what an incredible difference we can make.
And it was great to meet someone as inspiring as Eben Goodstein. When we come back, you're going to meet someone who will also inspire you. She's the author of a new book series called Greenopia.
The Morning Retort with Scott and Sims. to understand it.
Mitt Romney.
What drives people?
Massachusetts governor. If he can't protect his own citizens from tunnels, how will he protect you from terrorists? Done. Campaign is dead. See how easy it was?
It was that easy. See, that's the problem on the left. You're the problem right there. You got all, you think you get all the answers to all the little questions that does not drive a lot of people outside of California, outside of both coasts, outside of California and New York. Northeast. I mean, this is not the world. This is not the center of the universe, Mr. Sims.
If Romney gets the nomination, the tunnels win. Think about it. Tourists, Terra, Earth, tunnels.
Do the math, Scott!
It's very erotic. I'm being turned on by all this talk.
Scott and Sims, mornings 5:30 to 9 on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Play perfectly. I just joined Cash Creek's Cash Club, and I received $100 in free bonus play.
Play profitably.
I just joined Cash Club and automatically got an instant shot at $1 million.
Play endlessly. Cash Creek has thousands of the newest, hottest slots, and bonus play just keeps the action going.
Play, bonusfully at Cash Creek, Northern California's only AAA four-diamond casino resort. Just join the Cash Club, and you can start out with up to $500 in free bonus play. It's like playing with their money. Well, not like it. You really are playing with their money. Plus, don't forget the instant shot at $1 million. And you can't play on an empty stomach, so they're giving away over 150 $25 dining comps every day. So you can play and dine on their dollar. Cash Creek Casino Resort. Well played. Visit by taking I-80 to 505 North and 16 West. For tickets, visit cashcreek.com or any Ticketmaster outlet.
Cell phones in movie theaters. Please, you're not a cardiologist on call. You're a putz whose babysitter wants to know where the ketchup is. And then you tell her in the middle of the movie. Sometimes it's so loud in the theater I can barely hear what the black people are yelling at the screen. There is a simple solution. Put your cell phone on vibrate and then up your... All right, new rule. No more celebrating gastric bypass. Carney Wilson, Al Roker, and now Star Jones are all being heralded by the media for stapling their stomachs shut. They shouldn't be. They're not making a brave choice to change. They're giving money to doctors to reroute their ability to turn food into crap.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Welcome back to Eco Talk. And while I was at the Global Green event in San Francisco earlier this week, Leo DiCaprio was there. The founders of Google were there. Lots of pretty-looking models in green things, pretty green things. But I was most excited, perhaps, to meet Gay Brown. Why? Well, she has just come out with a book that is going to be coming out around the country soon or in the next few years. But right now, they have just released a book called Greenopia, The Urban Dweller's Guide to Green Living. This one, this first edition, happens to be for Los Angeles, and I can't think of a place that needs greening more than Los Angeles. So I said, you've got to come on Eco Talk. So while she was in town, we grabbed her, and here she is in the Eco Talk studios on Green Street. Welcome.
Hi.
Congratulations on putting out a pretty ambitious book. I'm sure it took a lot of research to find green spots in L.A., and it looks sort of like a Zagat's guide. Is that the idea?
That's the idea. We want to be the green Zagat's of the green world.
You say Zagat's, I say Zagat's.
Zagat.
you got a good idea here. That's all I can say. So where did this idea emanate from?
I was asthmatic as a child, and so when I went to rebuild my house in 1994, I decided that I wanted to put in the most pure materials I could find. And at that time, in 1994, it was very difficult to find building materials. So I started a Rolodex of where to find building materials and paints and other things to go in your home. And once that was done, I had two more children, and I started to figure out what to put in their lives and their bodies that can make them healthy, and just began a quest for finding local green to make my family healthier and happier.
I'm aware of a woman, Wendy something, I can't remember her last name. I interviewed her a few years ago, who was doing green maps, and it was similar, sort of mapping out where the green spots are. But I imagine there's many more now, enough to really qualify having a full book.
There are a lot of guides in various different communities that focus on different audiences. Our guide, as I like to say, it's the dummy guide to being green, in the sense that you could open it up, and whether it's my 70-year-old father or my 7-year-old son, they could look at it and look at our leaf rating system, and they can tell that one place is greener than the next, but it's a place that they should go. So we have a proprietary award system that we give to these businesses and services to help identify how green they are based on their businesses and service practices.
I see you have leaves next to each item.
We do. Well, there's some categories that are not rated, that because the rating system is too difficult to, it's changing, or it's too difficult to rate, we sort of leave them out, like architects. We don't have a leaf rating system for architects.
Okay. Bill McDonough was there, by the way, speaking of green architects. So you have a combination of organic restaurants to healthy pet boutiques. It's really quite a range from A to Z. Do you have something
for every category we like to have. We don't have hospitals or other public places at this point, but we'd like to eventually graduate into them. But it's sort of everything you need to live a green life.
I can imagine. I need to go to the hospital. Let me look up, let me find a green one first. I guess you wouldn't do that in an emergency. Well, this is very helpful. What do you plan to do after Los Angeles?
Our next edition is going to be in San Francisco, which is launching in the spring. And then after that, we have plans to go to New York, Chicago, and 15 other cities in the next 2 years. So we're very excited.
How has this been received? I imagine people are saying, yeah, what a good idea. Why didn't I think of that?
It's terrific. It's flying off the shelf. The good thing is it's flying off the shelf. The bad thing is that we're already ready to do a new edition in L.A., and we're just finishing San Francisco. So it's there's a lot of work in this area, but we're constantly changing and honing our research so that we can become more widely accepted, and we can also use other people's research to help us develop our criteria.
I imagine once you get known, you're going to get a lot of emails from people telling you about their favorite neighborhood, you know, green bookstore or something like that. So
we hope that's the goal.
New additions. I think you got a job for life here. I assume this is on recycled content paper?
100% New Leaf.
New Leaf. Mm-hmm. Our friends at New Leaf. Terrific. So this is great to know about. Where can people get it? Their local bookstore?
You can get it at the local bookstore as well as Whole Foods. Whole Foods is really our biggest seller. So sometimes it's at the front checkout counter, and sometimes it's in their book or their health section. But definitely most bookstores, Borders.
We have a couple minutes left. If there's nothing else you want to say about the book, I just want to talk about that event, which was pretty amazing this week. Just probably the most glamorous green event I've been to. It really seems like green has come of age. When you have models in green clothing and all kinds of fancy folks, some flown in from L.A., it seemed. I guess we know we've arrived, we greenies.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I launched Greenopia, was because I grew up in the 60s where there was a lot of hippie skippy granola for green, and which is really where my heart is. But I realize now in this day and age that marketing and life has become very chic. And so the cover of Greenopia reflects a very sort of streamlined approach so that green is an attractive and an attainable product for everything.
From hippie to hip
is what
green has done. So, and it's all about health, isn't it? I mean, that's where people are really intersecting with this, realizing that, I have a baby. What should I put on that baby in terms of clothing? What kind of food? People are really waking up to some of the ingredients in our everyday products that we used to assume were safe because they wouldn't sell it if it wasn't safe.
What we find is that there are sort of pivotal points in people's lives where they make that choice of becoming green. For me, it was respiratory and building my house that really opened up my eyes. And then my oldest son was diagnosed with autism-related learning issues. And so I jumped into it even further to find out what environmental causes affected his health. And so I think what happens is everyone has a green story and a green spot that you can touch. And it just tried to cover that for us, so that we cover as many spots as we can cover.
I happen to have two friends who have autistic children, and I hope they're listening. So what are some of the environmental factors that they believe, or you believe, are linked to autism, which is growing, is it not?
It is. Autism is a widely spread situation, whether it was actually, it's sort of a growing epidemic with young children. My biggest focus on the autism was the amount of mercury that my son had in his system, which slowed the brain processing apart, and it sort of disconnected his brain. So what I did was a lot of mercury detoxing. But when I had him, I had a mouthful of fillings from being in the 60s as a child, and then I ate tuna fish every day. Tuna is laden with mercury, and now the federal government has even warnings on their cans to say pregnant women should not eat tuna fish or swordfish or other high mercury fishes. So on our website and in our book, we have sort of the safe fishes for people to eat, especially if you're pregnant.
Are you saying you believe it was that tuna fish consumption that led to his autism?
I can only say that in my personal experience, when my son went through the mercury detoxing situation, his he improved dramatically. So wow. Going from not giving me eye contact or other sort of problematic things with autism, a little head banging, when we detoxed him from the mercury and he still has a little left in his system, those things became less and went away eventually. So whether it was a link or a coincidence, I'll take the link.
That's remarkable. They should study your son. I mean, this is something that needs to be known. If you really had measurable effects and improvements.
There's some great autism nonprofits now. I mean, Autism Speaks, I think, is one of the ones that just emerged. So just look on the internet, and that mercury link is widely publicized now.
As is so often the case, it's a personal experience that really motivates us to look for greener alternatives. Gabe Brown, thank you for this one. It's a great addition to the green books out there, Greenopia, The Urban Dweller's Guide to Green Living. First one is out for Los Angeles. San Francisco is next, and coming soon to a city near you. We'll be back in a city near you. Have a great day.